Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light, one if by land and two if by sea, and I on the opposite shore will be ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm for the country folk to be up and to arm." Then he said good night, and with muffled oar silently rowed to the Charleston shore, just as the moon rose over the bay, where swinging wide at her moorings lay the Somerset, British man of war, a phantom ship, with each mast and spar across the moon like a prison bar and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. Meanwhile, his friend, through alley and street, wanders and watches with eager ears till in the silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramp of feet, and the measured tread of the grenadiers marching down to their boats on the shore. Then he climbed to the tower of the church, up the wooden stairs with stealthy tread, to the belfry chambered overhead, and startled the pigeons from their perch on the somber rafters that round him made masses and moving shapes of shade, by the trembling ladder steep and tall to the highest window in the wall, where he paused to listen and look down a moment on the roofs of the town and the moonlight flowing over all. Beneath, in the churchyard, lay the dead, in their night encampment on the hill, wrapped in silence so deep and still that he could hear, like a sentinel's tread, the watchful night wind as it went, creeping along from tent to tent and seeming to whisper, "All is well." A moment only he feels the spell of the place and the hour and the secret dread of the lonely belfry and the dead. For suddenly all his thoughts are bent on a shadowy something far away, where the river widens to meet the bay, a line of black that bends and floats on the rising tide like a bridge of boats. Meanwhile, impatient to mount and ride, booted and spurred with a heavy stride, on the opposite shore walked Paul Revere. Now he patted his horse's side, now gazed on the landscape far and near, then impetuous stamped the earth, and turned then tightened his saddle girth. But mostly he watched with eager search the belfry tower of the old North Church, as it rose above the graves on the hill, lonely and spectral and somber and still, and low as he looks on the belfry's height, a glimmer and then a gleam of light. He springs to the saddle, the bridle he turns, but lingers and gazes till full on his sight, a second lamp in the belfry burns. A hurry of hoofs in a village street, a shape in the moonlight, a bulk in the dark, and beneath from the pebbles, in passing, a spark, struck out by a steed that flies fearless and fleet. That was all, and yet, through the gloom and the light, the fate of a nation was riding that night. And the spark struck out by that steed in his flight kindled the land into flame with his heat. He has left the village and mounted the steep, and beneath him tranquil and broad and deep is the mystic meeting the ocean tides, and under the alders that skirt its edge, now soft on the sand, now loud on the ledge, is heard the tramp of his steed as he rides. It was 12 by the village clock when he crossed the bridge into Medford town. He heard the crowing of the cock and the barking of the farmer's dog, and felt the damp of the river fog that rises when the sun goes down. It was 1 by the village clock when he galloped into Lexington. He saw the gilded weathercock swim in the moonlight as he passed, and the meeting house windows, blank and bare, gaze at him with a spectral glare, as if they already stood aghast at the bloody work they would look upon. It was 2 by the village clock when he came to the bridge in Concord town. He heard the bleating of the flock and the twitter of birds among the trees, and felt the breath of the morning breeze blowing over the meadows brown, and one was safe and asleep in his bed, who at the bridge would be first to fall, who that day would be lying dead, pierced by a British musket ball. You know the rest, in the books you have read, how the British regulars fired and fled, how the farmers gave them ball for ball, from behind each fence and farmyard wall, chasing the redcoats down the lane, then crossing the fields to emerge again, under the trees at the turn of the road, and only pausing to fire and load. So through the night rode Paul Revere, and so through the night went his cry of alarm to every Middlesex village and farm, a cry of defiance and not of fear, a voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore. For, born the night wind of the past, through all our history to the last, in the hour of darkness and peril and need, the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed and the midnight ride of Paul Revere. It's Patriots Day. It's the day the news forgets. It's the day the news forgets every year. It's April 19th, the day, actually last night was the night of Paul Revere's ride. This is the morning of the Battle of Lexington and Concord. And even though the rest of the news media has forgotten it, we have it here. So happy Patriots Day. Happy Independence. So it's another one of those marathon Wednesdays. Nobody's here. Bill Fecky hasn't come back to the show yet. Wendy Arthur is busy, and so is Diane Warner. So we have no Fecky report. We have no Oh My God report. We have no election integrity report, even though we certainly need to get those folks here. So once again, it's just me for 3 hours. And I also, fortunately, I have two of our regular callers, Josh in Illinois and Pianchi, somewhere in the Midwest or the South. I haven't figured out where he is today, but Josh, you were first. You actually called before the show started, so let's welcome you in here. And what's on your mind?
Well, I'm glad that you're actually scraping the bottle there for this one. No, I was.
I was just thinking my poem. I only messed up one word. And what folks don't know, when you read on the air, you have to keep moving. You got to keep scrolling down. And if you lose your place for a second, you try to remember whatever word it was. So I goofed up something, but I figured I'd correct it at the time. But I feel bad about that. But anyway, so my apologies to Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Getting a little bit of background noise. We're hearing some crinkly noise. So we'll see if we can keep that to a minimum for a good recording. But otherwise, I thought of this morning. I thought, damn, Paul Revere. Yeah, I got to read that. Anyway, so that's where we are. Pianchi, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Greg.
There we go. I knew you were there. Yeah, I'm going to address you. You called in. So I know what Josh wants to talk about.
Take time to mute.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
I said it takes time to unmute. Screen goes into screen favorite, and you got to bring that up, and you have to unmute. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed that poem for one particular reason.
Uh-huh.
I had to learn that, and we had to recite it. And I believe it was either the fourth or the sixth grade. I don't remember quite, but
really?
One of those.
That's a long poem.
Yeah.
I would have trouble with that because I'm really not good at memorization. I'm better at
a black school. Uh-huh. Majority black, and
right.
We learned the midnight ride of Paul Revere and had to say it in front of the class, and some people put emphasis in the words like Almighty God.
Well, I should have you read it next time. It'd be great. Let's have you do it.
Oh, I can't remember. I don't think I
well,
ever remember.
Well, I can send
it
to you. I it's easy to find. I mean, it took me a few seconds to find it, but holidays are really special around here. I tend to find something memorable. Like I always read Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech on Martin Luther King Day. Memorial Day, we go over the poetry of soldiers written in combat. July 4th, we go over founding documents. Labor Day, we go over labor history and strikes and, assassinations by corporations and Pinkertons. And, every day we do something, every holiday, I don't take them. The only two I take off because nobody's listening are Thanksgiving and Christmas. But I could do stuff for those as well. But anyway, I always try and do that. But, Pianchi, if you ever want to do a reading, just let me know. I'm happy to, have you on and do it.
I'm an adult now. I probably could read Patton's speech, but I couldn't read it without a lot of blips and bleaks back when I was a kid.
Why don't you do that? Why don't you look up Patton's speech, and whenever you're ready to read it, let me know. Let's put that on the show. That's actually a good idea. I'm serious. Go ahead. Just look it up online. It won't be hard to find. Let's put emphasis on give it the Almighty God, Almighty Patton.
Almighty God.
Yeah.
And, we had to read those, and we had to recite them. We had to learn them. We watched. Mm-hmm. I made my grandson watch war movies.
Uh-huh.
Had to. I mean, that was a requirement. You had to watch a World War One and World War Two movies and go back and study Oliver Cromwell and things like that.
It's funny you mentioned Cromwell because when I was in Australia, we had to – that was one of our field trips at a very, very advanced progressive school. They had us doing interviews on full-day field trips with tape recorders at 10 years old. And this is back in the 60s. And so, of course, tape recorders, cassettes were still fairly new then. And so we were really advanced. But one of our field trips was to go see Cromwell. And I'm like 10 years old. That's a violent film for a 10 years old. But we talked about it. We talked about the next day. We talked about British history. We talked about, you know, the beheading of Charles I and the divine right of kings and everything else. And so I've been dealing, you know, in Canada and Australia, but especially Australia, with a lot of British Commonwealth history, which is really interesting. The other interesting point you make, I know you're joking when you said you were reading it like Almighty God, you know, but Black Americans read speeches differently. Black Americans read speeches differently.
Brandon Matt, Harold Thornton. Uh-huh. Harold Thornton, he read before, I think he was the first one to read, and he put that emphasis in there, and we all cracked up.
But the point is Black Americans read speeches differently. I mean, you'll put that emphasis in. It would never mm-hmm. occur to me to do that. I mean, I try and read it straight and get the words right, you know, but I don't put the same emotion into it. So that's, you know, this is why I say that's part of the reason I'm curious to have you do patent speech. I really want to hear it. I think it's going to be great. Let's bring Josh back in the conversation. So you had something you want to talk about too. And I know today is an interesting day. We've got 3 hours. We've got plenty of time to do this. The title of the show, Waco, Lexington, Warsaw, and Oklahoma, what do they have in common? And Josh actually was on called in before the show started. And we have the Boston Massacre, and also we have I don't think it was April 19th, though. But we certainly had the Boston terrorist attack by the Chechens, the Muslims that nobody wants to talk about. And you don't think white people can be Muslim? Surprise, surprise. Anyway, so Josh, let's get to you on this. And like I said, we've got plenty of time for both of you to talk about these different issues. Josh?
Yes, sir. The Boston Massacre, the first person executed was actually Christus Attucks. He was black and Native American. And, but there was eight people that were killed that day. And,
I'm
sorry?
Well, the British didn't discriminate. They didn't just kill the white people.
I know. I know. They really didn't care.
They didn't care.
If you were American, it didn't matter what you looked like. As long as you were not wearing a red coat, you were probably...
Well, also, wasn't William Dawes or one of the riders, there's three riders that night. We hear about two of them. Probably those were the two white guys. But one of the riders was black. Pianki, do you know who that is? Do you remember that? There are three riders that went out. Was it William Dawes?
No, I don't remember any films associated with it.
We'll have to look it up because I know there were three writers. Anyway, Josh, back to you. So,
I was going to go into the progression of that because the moment that Bostonians were slaughtered by the British, everybody was kind of really angry in the colonies. And then about 3 years later, they came out with that Boston Tea Party. They tossed that tea in the ocean, you know, obviously. Turmoil. There was a bunch of taxation. Everybody had complaints because the British Empire was always terrible and nobody should live under foreign rule. But yeah, those two things and all the other nonsense that they did along the way, yeah, there was a beginning and an end to what we were willing to tolerate as American people. And
yeah, but look what they're willing to tolerate now.
I don't know if
now.
I should bow at this point.
Well, you know, but look what Americans are willing to tolerate now. Look at COVID. How many Americans thought that it was okay for the government to take our constitutional rights away with the excuse that it's public health? How many Americans wore masks for no reason, even after they knew they didn't work? How many Americans were willing to have our schools, you know, come back after knowing what they were doing? You know, in the terrible stuff, or at least, you know, have them continue after the ridiculous lessons that they saw, you know, on the internet. How many Americans still think Fauci is a good person? Speaking of, you should see my Facebook post on him. I said, you know, what's an appropriate punishment for Dr. Fascist? And I said, solitary confinement, eating live bugs. And I was one of the nicer ones. You should see what the other people have written. But how many Americans are perfectly accepting that the Supreme Court can interpret the Constitution, something we know they can't do, even though it's commonly accepted, and that's one of the assumptions. How many Americans have no concept of freedom, don't know anything about our war for independence, don't know anything about today, and how many journalists are not covering the fact that this is Patriots Day? I mean, at least cover the Boston Marathon. That's something. And call it Patriots Day, but it's not even that. There's a blackout. There's a complete blackout of anything to do with Patriots Day today, which is, of course, why I'm doing everything to do with Patriots Day today. Either one of you, feel free, jump in.
I'm not going to point out that you're in Florida.
Well, you just did. What does that have to do with it? What do you mean I'm not going to point out that you're in Florida?
I said I wasn't going to point that out. No,
but by not pointing it out, you pointed it out. So that's kind of silly.
I know. By proxy. Yeah, no, I'm up in a place called Illinois, and we do things a little bit differently here. Our entire state is dictated from a city that is not our capital.
Well, you got riots up there. Yeah, so what's the capital of what's the capital of Illinois? Hang on, let me think about it. Is it Champaign? Springfield. Okay, okay.
Springfield.
That's Lincoln's home.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. Literally, my parents met in the town that Lincoln met with his opposition to have a debate down in Kentucky. Yeah, I know. This is not,
that's interesting.
None of this is new.
Okay. Well, what's going on in your town there? What's with these riots? Is the complete breakdown of society in Chicago, or what's going on?
Well, I'm not going to say that I called this out like, a decade ago. I said that Chicago is going to go the way of Detroit. And the reason that is because people are terrible, and they're going to continue to do terrible things. And we have a very strange socioeconomic thing that we're doing right now, where we're saying a class of people are victims of everything without having any accountability for anything that they do. So, yeah, Chicago is going to tear down itself. I mean, how many, five Walmarts are now leaving Chicago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's like the oppression of victimhood. It's like the more people claim to be victims, the more it gives them the right to oppress others, and the self-justification that it's okay to, like when they beat up that couple, the white woman and the black guy, the teenage couple. It's like, it's okay because, you know, we're oppressed, so we can do this. You know, and it's really a warped sense of everything. It's very strange what's going on in Chicago right now. I wouldn't go there. You know, it's like we've got war zones in this country.
Avoid Chicago, avoid L.A., avoid New York City. Yes, absolutely.
Pianchi?
If you want to live. I'm sorry. That should have been important for me to say from the get-go. If you enjoy your life, if you would like to continue living, avoid major cities in America.
Well, not all major cities.
I agree. But who's doing all this in these cities?
I'm just saying this is a ridiculous way for us to live amongst each other.
I know the answer to that question, but go ahead, Josh. Who's doing this in all these
cities? Josh, who's doing all this in these cities?
Anybody that thinks that they are justified in doing so.
See,
I don't
care
what you look like.
Now, the right has got you conditioned to not use the words that you should be using, so a honest person would have a better understanding of who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That thing down in Nashville. Anybody that thinks that they're justified in doing so, I'm not worried about anybody's appearance.
No, I'm talking about Chicago.
Chicago.
Greg, who's doing all this in Chicago?
Young black folks. Who's doing it? Yeah. Yeah. In fact,
Pianchi,
were you on the line? Hold on, Josh, for a second. Pianchi, were you on the line when I talked about this cartoon that was posted by a friend of mine, I forgot who, this weekend, and it showed two looters walking out of a Walmart, and they're both white. I said, this is a racist comic. This is a racist cartoon, because every video I've ever seen, the people are young and black. And I said, I don't know are they so afraid? I said, the cartoonist must be white and suffering from white guilt, because you show me any looting video with either some or all white people carrying stuff out of there, or Hispanic or Asian, or you don't see it. It's young black people who are looting these stores, and that's a problem. But the biggest problem is, as Pianchi says, no one's openly saying it, but that's what's going on. So why can't we say it? I'm not being racist. I'm being truthful. Silence from the crowd. So
whites have been intimidated.
Mm-hmm.
COVID and white intimidation has been two miracles that have worked very effectively.
Yeah.
Whites have been intimidated to where they're afraid to say what's on their mind. It's just remarkable. It's just amazing.
Well, I don't think it's all white people, because there's a lot of white liberals that are terrible, that are tyrannical. And I'll get into, well, I want to talk about the Fox News thing a little bit later with how they basically kowtowed to Dominion. But there's a contingent of white conservative Christian, especially men, who won't say anything. And being a white conservative Christian man, I got to rebel against that and say, look, this is the whole point of this. One of the points of the show is that we are a free speech zone. One of the last free speech zones. You can say what you want. And just a case in point, we have a lot of different perspectives on the show. I had a person yesterday who I'm going to have on, I think, on a fairly regular basis, progressive socialist. How many chances do you get to talk to a progressive socialist on a show that's generally more conservative than conservative? I mean, we're on the patriot end of the scale here. We're on the founder's end of it, but we got some rare insight. Go ahead.
What's the definition of progressive, sir? We taken $50 from those who work hard, and now we want $75. Is that progressive, sir?
Well, it's going to be very interesting. You got to listen to the hour yesterday, because there's some very interesting things. What my conclusion was is that there are progressives and conservatives who both love this country, have different ways of how to make it better, but they both love this country. So we have stuff in common. We can talk. Who we can't talk to are the globalists. And there are liberal globalists, and there are conservative globalists. There are Republican rhino globalists and Democrat socialist globalists. It's the globalists that hate this country that we can't talk to. And so the real split in this country is, as we've talked about before, it's basically between, nationalists and globalists. That's the real split. And so the reason I wanted to have a progressive socialist person on, who actually is running against Nancy Pelosi right now. So this is serious stuff. Bianca Von Krieg, who was on yesterday, and we actually talked about getting AOC on the show, which would be fabulous. A lot of our legislation, our legislation is nonpartisan. Getting tax relief to people so they don't have to have any money withheld until they've earned their standard deduction. That's not a conservative bill or a liberal bill.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. But another thing, too.
Uh-huh.
You won't look at the people with the racist attitude. The further up north and to the east you go, you find, you made mention of the Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the American Road Race Club, I think they put on the Boston Masks or participate. They had a standing rule that only Americans could win first prize. So if you had a Kenyan, Kenyans and Ethiopians always eat up.
They always win.
First place.
If it's a long-distance
right.
race,
but
the Kenyans,
they could not,
I know, but the Ethiopians.
They could not
yeah.
be awarded
really?
First prize.
That's insane.
Yes. Yeah.
I kind of agree with that.
Well, wait a minute. You agree with that? Why?
I'm sorry. If you know that somebody is going to win, that's not fair. That's not the American spirit.
What do you mean not fair? Well, here's the thing. You either have to limit it to American citizens and make it an American patriotic race, which is okay, or if it's open to everybody, then whoever wins, you have to award them first place. You can't have it both ways.
I also agree with that. I don't know. I'm kind of split on that.
Okay.
It's a weird position to sit in.
Well, listen, we used to have a race in San Francisco.
What about the Olympics then? Yeah, what about the Olympics? It's open to all the people in the world, but if you only say that certain ethnic groups can have
yeah.
a first place,
yeah, but it,
right, then you just invite everybody else there for pure entertainment.
If you're participating in the Olympics, you have to be a citizen of the country that you're trying to compete for, right?
Well,
yeah,
there was that American.
You got Africans that.
Who was the American skater?
You got
skater
Africans on the Canadian Olympic team.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
So you have black Africans on the Italian Olympic team and other teams, too.
Are they citizens of Italy?
Well, I don't know if they are. I would imagine they would be, but I'm just saying how people get around that rule.
Well, there are family
but
connections.
No,
there's different things. But, yeah, you can't do that. But we had a gymnast who competed for China in the last Olympics. Communist China. Remember that? She's from San Francisco, of course.
Yeah.
But she has family connections with China. So, yeah, see, that's the thing. You know, whatever your predominant nation is, you know, wherever your citizenship and your residence is, that's who you should compete for. Now, I love having other teams in sports, like the Jamaican bobsled team is my personal favorite.
I love that.
It's such a great contradiction. In fact, I've lost it. But I used to have a sweatshirt from the Calgary Olympics when they first competed. One of the things I want to talk about at some point, not too much today, but I thought of this last night, that one of the ways you get banned from a sport or banned from winning a sport is if you have illegal drugs in your system or if you're blood doping. And so I'm wondering if anybody's ever challenged the so-called trans athletes, especially Michael Thomas, who's a dude, going against, you know, Riley Gaines and other women swimmers, whether, you know, he has, you know, too much testosterone in his system to be considered female. Well, of course, he would naturally because he's a guy. But I'm just curious, has anybody ever used that angle to approach, you know, getting the guys out of women's sports? Because you don't see women competing in guy sports. You know, women who are supposedly trans male, you don't see them. It's always, always, you know, bigger, stronger men, you know, altering themselves to appear female who are winning all these records in female sports.
They did that parts per million when it came to the Olympics. They're not going to do that in the NCAA.
Well, that's too bad. They should. Well, let's see what happens in the next Olympics. When's the next Olympics? This is 23. So next year we've got another Olympics.
You're going to lead the charge.
Wait a minute. Do we have the summer ones or the winter ones? I think we had the summer ones last.
This is summer.
Oh, this summer, so the Winter Games? I kind of like the Winter Games. The Winter Games are much more exciting. The Winter Games used to be boring, but now they're much more fun than the summer, except for the gymnasts. Well, okay, so if a trans, you know, if a male, you know, faking being a female wants to compete in the gymnastics, then they have to do the women's events, parallel bar, you know, the balance beam, the uneven parallel bars, that kind of stuff. That would be interesting to see. Anyway, I've got something here on the back to Paul Revere. And so it says, what happened to the other two men on Paul Revere's ride? And this is from How Stuff Works with a question mark by Molly Edmonds. And I don't have a date on this article, but I'll see if I can find it at the end. Did you know that there were two men who accompanied Paul Revere on his famous midnight ride? If you don't, then you're not alone. The story of the midnight ride was stamped on the American psyche by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's popular 1861 poem, The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere. See, folks don't realize it was written almost 100 years after the actual event, you know, 1775 to 1861. That's just a curiosity of mine. Anyway, it says, anyone who's read the poem envisions a lone hero dashing through the night, single-handedly warning his countrymen of a British attack. But that's not the whole story. Two other men rode with Revere that night, William Dawes and Samuel Prescott. They were left out of the poem and subsequently most history books. So, as we do on Action Radio, let's correct the historical record. Back to the article. Some joke that Longfellow used Revere's name in his poem instead of Revere's comrades' names simply because it was easier to rhyme with the other key words. In fact, a woman named Helen F. Moore wrote a parody poem in 1896 titled The Midnight Ride of William Dawes. Oh, we have to look that up. I'm going to look that one up. I got to find that one. Anyway, this is the poem compares Dawes and Revere's accomplishments but complains, what was the use when my name was Dawes? The Midnight Pause of William Dawes? I mean, we could do that. Anyway, it says, more likely it was Paul Revere's established political fame in the Massachusetts colony that landed him his starring role in the Longfellow poem. If I remember, Paul Revere was a silversmith and a politician. Anyway, it says, a silversmith by trade. Yep, I guessed it right. He spent most of his free time supporting the Patriots' cause. He had participated in the Boston Tea Party to protest taxation without representation, which Josh had mentioned earlier, one of the main events leading up to the Revolutionary War. And he was known as a reliable courier for news and messages that needed to be distributed to Patriot leadership, so much so that the British even had someone tracking his movements. Well, not that night, apparently. But truth be told, it was really Samuel Prescott who completed the midnight ride. Read on to find out how the three riders carried out their mission on the night of April 18th, 1775, to start the American Revolution. Well, it's not a revolution. It was a war for independence. Josh, let me go to you. What's the difference? Revolution versus war for independence.
A war for independence is to literally claim independence. A war for revolution is to try to remain under the same tyranny or the same locale when it comes to leadership. But a little bit different. Probably not something you're going to like either way.
Okay, disagree, but I'll get to that in a minute. Pianki, why do they call it a revolution? It wasn't a revolution. It was a war for independence.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't nothing exists that you could change. You have to have something to change before you have a revolution.
See,
and Christopher Attucks was not the first person to die in a revolution either. As people
okay.
have.
Christopher Attucks wasn't the first person to get. I'm sorry. I'll be quiet.
No, it's okay.
He had died before the revolution even started. So you got a lot of blacks who like to revise history, like to say that the first person to die in the Revolutionary War was a black man. Actually, they was walking out of a tavern and got in an argument and, you know, something pursued, but that was before the war began.
That wasn't the actual story. The story is that they were throwing snowballs at the Red Guard, and they got a little bit angry, and they started putting rocks in the middle of the snowballs, and it hit a soldier's head, and it caused a little gush, and then they started turning around and shooting.
It kind of reminded me of idiots throwing frozen water bottles at police in riots today.
Are you telling me that nobody back then was smarter than we are today with our genius behavior?
I think human beings learn from experience. And that experience could warrant a profit or a mistake. So
yes,
that's
sir.
The way it goes.
But, you know, we already did that in France and we already did that in Rome. You know, how many times do you have to repeat the same mistake?
Well, yeah, but everybody wasn't at those events. And you have smart people. You know, that's another thing. Intelligence and brilliance is not isolated to any one ethnic group. I mean, you can go to the most remotest places, and out of those people in that place, you can pull someone that's brilliant in any particular area, whether it's science, cooking, innovation, or whatever.
Yes, sir.
No, I just happened
to listen to
you. I got some other things I've been pulling up here. Let me see if I can find that poem for you. I was looking up that poem. You know, it's in History Minute, right? And, you know, let's see if I get the poem for you. There you go. But to me, definition of a revolution versus war for independence. Independence, you know, we already had the revolution. I mean, in other words, America was already established as an independent group of people who just wanted to be free, and the British wanted to subjugate, you know, Americans and make colonies. Well, we weren't changing anything. The revolution, I guess, well, maybe I have to rethink this a little bit. The revolution was what had already occurred. In other words, our founding, you know, based on principles of individual rights. You know, so it was really a war for independence from the British. I guess the revolution, I don't know. The people that came here had already been through their own personal revolution, otherwise they wouldn't have come here. I have to rethink that. But when I think of the French Revolution, for example, was a political, philosophical change. And it got incredibly violent. And I don't think it accomplished what they wanted, but they went from a monarchy, you know, to a dictatorship and then back to a monarchy. It's kind of interesting. Let me see if I can find, where's the poem? They're not giving me the poem. Huh. I'll have to find it.
Greg, at this point, I need a serenade. I want to hear some poetic justice.
Okay. Well, let me see if I can find the poem from the person that wrote it here. Let's go back to my article. On this day, what happened? Here we go. I get a bunch of ads. No, that's not the one I'm looking for. I'm a little all over the place today. That's okay. Let's see if I can find it. Here we go. So it was, who wrote the poem? Helen Moore, Helen F. Moore. So let's add that to my search and see what I get here. Da-da-da-da-da. Poem, Helen F. Moore, H-E-L. I've never heard the other one. That's why I'm kind of curious. H-E-L. Then we have a bunch of stuff to talk about with the different events that happened this day. Okay, let's see if I can get the parody here. I don't think I've ever heard this one. So where's... They talk about her poem, but they don't actually give it to me. This is the part that frustrates me. Ah, here we go. I think I found it. It is worth a... this is from Real Clear History. It is worth the read, so I hope I've concluded this entry with the full text of the poem. I am a wandering beer shade, hero made. Poets never sung my praise. Nobody crowned my brow with bay. And if you ask me the fatal cause, I answer only, name was Dot. This is all very well for the children to hear of the man I write, Paul Revere. But why should my name be forgot, who wrote as boldly and well, God wot? Why should I ask? The reason is clear. My name was Dawes and his Revere. This is actually pretty good. When the lights from the old church flashed out, Paul Revere was waiting about, but I was already on the way. The shadow of night fell cold and gray as I rode with never a break or pause. But what was the use when my name was Dawes? Henry rings with his silvery name. Close to me are the portals of fame. Had he been Dawes and I Revere, no one had heard of him, I fear. No one heard of me because he was Revere and I was Dawes. That's a great poem. I had never heard that before. Pian, you heard that?
Can you just, I'm sorry, just conceptualize, because you hear the concept of somebody being revered. Can you conceptualize, like in your mind, somebody being dosed?
That's an interesting point. I never thought about that, that Paul Revere was revered because he was Revere. That's a really good point. I never thought about that. It's funny how our language works. All right, let's talk for a little bit before we do more of the Lexington Concord thing, which we'll get to. There's four things, actually there's a bunch of things that happened on this day. Waco, Lexington, Warsaw, and Oklahoma. Which one do you want to take up first, gentlemen? Anybody else wants to call in, feel free. Let's see if Marco's in.
Please, anybody call in talking about Waco and Janet Reno.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. In fact, I got Marco on live chat in the Netherlands, so he's on with us now, too. He's probably been here for a little. Yeah, no, I actually just got on. Marco, to get you caught up here, this is Patriots Day. This is the day that started the War for Independence, as we call it. Some people call it American Revolution. We can debate that. But the British sailed into town, and they marched up from Boston to Lexington, where I used to live. It's about 13 miles, and they marched up the hill, and it took them all, you know, a good part of the morning. They eventually got to the Lexington Battle Green, where a bunch of drunken Minutemen, because if you were facing 600 British soldiers, I'd have a couple of, mugs of mead myself. And face them with muskets, and I think it was about 20 or 30. I'm not sure how many Minutemen. Not that many. But they held up the British long enough in Lexington so that the other Minutemen gathered at the old North Church, and that's where the real battle really got going. And the British were shot at, you know, from behind trees, you know, as they marched bravely down the street in their redcoats in nice formation, thank you very much, all the way back to Boston, and the war was on. So that, in a nutshell, is what happened on April 19th. Now, as a citizen, I know I was still Canadian at this point, but as a resident of Lexington, Massachusetts, you know, I rang the belfry. We used to do, high school kids, we'd get a chance to ring the belfry, you know, before dawn. So we'd be up there like 4 in the morning, ringing the old belfry, you know, alerting the town. And, of course, the Minutemen were in the Buckman Tavern, which still stands. And nobody knows where the shot heard around the world came from. I'm guessing... It's came from one of the houses or the tavern itself. Anyway, so the British lined up, and Captain John Parker was the captain of the Minutemen, and he said, "Don't fire unless fired upon. But if they mean to start a war, let it begin here." And of course, that's exactly what happened. And so I've seen reenactments. You know, they had the British come in, march into town. The biggest one was 1976. Excuse me. The bicentennial, when I was still in high school, I was a junior in high school, and Gerald Ford was there, and they had the whole reenactment and the whole thing, and they had security and Secret Service everywhere. It was amazing. And Jerry Ford was shaking hands, and then he was about to shake my hand, and then the Secret Service said, "Nope, time to switch sides." So I missed shaking Jerry Ford's hand as he crossed the street to go meet other people. But I looked into his eyes, and it was interesting looking at the eyes of a president, and it's kind of like Joe Biden. It's like nobody was really there. I didn't see that alert consciousness. You know, you see some presidents like Jimmy Carter. When I saw him in Washington during my 1980 internship, he was intense. You knew, you know, right or wrong. And I think he was wrong in a lot of things, but there was definitely, you know, a brain working there. There was somebody home. Donald Trump, same way, is very intense and knows exactly what's going on. Joe Biden hasn't a clue. Ronald Reagan was very affable and friendly, but, you know, he knew what was going on too. So is Barack Obama. Very intense, very intelligent, and very dangerous. But it's interesting that some of the presidents, Bill Clinton, I have no clue. I don't know what he knows or what he was doing. Anyway, just had a question about Janet Reno and Waco. So let's start with Waco. Let's start with the biggest event that happened on this day 30 years ago. Josh, what do you know about Waco and the Branch Davidians?
Well, I know that the guy was a cult leader. He convinced.
Why? What made it a cult?
Cult is when you cannot question your leader, mm-hmm. and especially – oh, he – oh, I'm sorry.
What?
He was going off of Christianity. I'm not going to say any other religion in America that is doing that right now.
Well, they were an offshoot of the Seventh-day Adventists. So they were you know, they were loosely affiliated with the Seventh-day Adventists. Okay, you don't hear about that much. So it had a religious foundation, but
yes,
could people come and go freely? Were they allowed to leave?
More or less, yes.
Well, more or less. I mean, it makes a difference.
More.
I mean, what makes a cult?
A cult is when you cannot question your leader.
What else?
When you're encouraged not to speak to other people. That might contradict your co-leader or your leaders.
Bianchi?
You can't question your leader in a church.
Yeah, that's interesting. You can't question the government.
I already did that. I'm Catholic.
What about questioning
too.
The government?
I already did that.
These days, yeah. So,
are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No.
We're not criticizing what you're saying, Josh, but you just remind that, and I'm saying in black churches on Wednesday night, during the class and teaching, you can't question the preacher or the pastor.
And that sounds very sad to me, my friend.
It's a cult.
See, this is where Wendy would normally be here. So I really wish we could be great to talk to her about. The minute you cannot question a pastor or a priest, a minister, or anybody in church, they've lost their purpose. I mean, you can question God.
So,
you know, Wendy talks about, you know, where it says in Scripture, you know, come reason with me when God is talking to us. You know, so if God will reason with you, who's to say, why do church ministers, pastors, fathers, you know, all these folks think that they can't be questioned? That puts them completely out of God right there.
Look at it another way, you two.
Okay.
A black conservative can't question a black liberal.
That's interesting. See, now on this show, anybody can question anybody. We don't have those labels, and anybody's welcome.
Can I throw something on the mix there?
Sure.
Jacob wrestled with an angel that God sent, and he named him Israel, which means to struggle with God. You're supposed to question things. I don't know.
Well, that's where we have free will and free reason. Along with free will comes free reason. But here's the thing. All right, let me give you a quick synopsis of Waco. So you've got a Seventh-day Adventist community that's really different. You got Koresh. I'll be honest. He's got some pretty wacky ideas. I mean, it's not a place where I would go. I would not be a part of that community. You know, basically, he thought he was the only one that could procreate with all the women, and he was the one that basically, you know, they're all married to him. I mean, he had some pretty strange ideas. But this is America. You're allowed to have strange ideas, and you're allowed to say, you're an idiot. I'm not going to be here and leave. But a certain, you know, percentage of people, a certain group were attracted to live in this religious compound. Now, here's what we also know. We know they had guns because they believed in the Second Amendment. We know that the Koresh, the leader, that wasn't his real name, he changed his name, used to go to town all the time. You know, it's not like the law enforcement couldn't talk to him. The sheriff, if he ever wanted to talk to Koresh, just said, hey, Dave, come on into town. We got to chat. I'm like, okay. So we know that local law enforcement had no problems with these people. Okay. State law enforcement had no problems with these people because if they did, they would have, you know, either questioned, arrested, subpoenaed, or done something in some kind of due process of law. But they never did. So it wasn't a problem. The group that had a problem with them or used them was the ATF. Now, Bill Clinton had just come to office, So this is 1993. So he would have been inaugurated January 20th of 1993 as he won the 1992 election. And the ATF was where they should be, you know, derided, looked upon as a horrible agency. And it was budget time. And they needed to show how tough they were and how big and strong they were and how necessary they were to the government to get funding. So they created something called Operation Showtime. That was the code name for Waco. So they start this thing where they want to, you know, come in guns blazing, serve a search warrant, and arrest a whole bunch of people. Well, the Branch Davidians shot back because the reporter tipped off that there was going to be a raid. Because the reporter, it's just like today. See, Waco was like the model for everything that's happening today. And so reporter, and I've got this in a story. I don't know if I'll get to the stories, so we'll just talk about it. But a reporter asked the Branch Davidians, you know, how to get there. You know, oh, okay. And, of course, they talked to David Koresh. And they're like, the day before, I said, wait a minute. We got something going on. There's going to be a raid here. So they were armed. They were ready with their guns. They thought they're all going to be killed, which is eventually what happened anyway. So they were right. So the ATF comes in, guns blazing, starts shooting. The current knowledge is that they fired the first shot. The Branch Davidians shot back. Four Branch Davidians were killed. I think one ATF person was either killed or injured. They went back, and then they created a siege. They literally surrounded the building. Well, the ATF is so incompetent that the FBI came in, you know, the real stormtroopers. And the whole operation, they surrounded them. They played horrible music, you know, at incredible decibels. They shone bright lights into there. They basically tortured these people for 51 days. And then when they say negotiations broke down, there were no negotiations. It was surrender or that's it. It was just surrender was the only option for these people. And they really thought they were going to be killed. And as it turns out, that's what happened. So Janet Reno's had enough. So she sends in the tanks. And they completely filled their community with this stuff called CS gas, which is a weapons grade poison gas, which Janet Reno called an irritant. Right. Yeah, that's like calling an atom bomb an explosion. It is like a little bit stronger than that. Anyway, so they had the CS gas, which is highly flammable, never to be used in a concentrated inside space. So of course they put it in there. They punched holes in the building so the wind would whistle through and literally fan the flames. Pyrotechnic devices were fired into the Branch Davidian home. And they were, of course, they exploded, and then CS gas caught fire, and the ATF and FBI were waiting outside with guns. And those who escaped from that were basically taken into custody and either made to testify against the Branch Davidians or arrested, or they were treated horribly. But at least they're better off than the people inside because they all died, including children. And rather than investigate this, the government sent in the bulldozers, bulldozed all these people into the ground in a mass grave. I don't even know if they've ever been taken out of there. As far as I know, the mass grave is probably still there. And they went for a congressional hearing where, guess who presided? Joe Biden. He was the senator in charge, right? So he established his creds as a domestic terrorist, KGB security agent with that. And it's been whitewashed, lied about. You know, the best movie on it is Waco, The Rules of Engagement. Would be the best description of what happened. Basically, this was a government massacre of a community for the sole purpose of making the ATF look good in a budget hearing and to make Clinton look big and tough and to show what a big and tough and bad dude he was, because we all thought he was a homosexual and we still do. So that's what happened
in
Waco.
I do not. No, I do not disagree with that in any way, shape, or form.
Okay,
no,
good.
That was a fair assessment of what they did.
Mm-hmm. And no one's been held responsible. Bill Clinton, who should have stood trial for mass murder, never has. Janet Reno died, so we can't hold her responsible. But as I told Pianki yesterday, do you know who the deputy attorney general was under Janet Reno at the time of Waco? Heavily involved in the operation.
Oh, please tell me it's somebody.
Eric,
I know their name.
Go ahead, Pianki. Who is it?
Hold it.
Yep, Eric Holder.
No, Eric.
Who went on to become Attorney General under Barack Obama. Who was his assistant?
I have a question.
Wait, hold on. Let me finish this. Who is the assistant deputy to Eric Holder?
Merrick
Garland, who also became Attorney General under the coup, under the illegal government of Joe Biden. So the two people who's still here, you know, from Waco, who were the number two and number three and the Department of Justice, there's a false name if ever there was one, both became attorney general and basically were national terrorists, setting up a KGB state. That's where they got their training, from Janet Reno at Waco. I find that fascinating. And that Joe Biden presided over the Waco hearings? Oh, please. Well, I have to check that out. Maybe it was John Danforth. I got to check that out. But I know Joe Biden was on the committee. Josh, I think you were going to say something.
Yes, sir.
Do you recognize those two names, Merrick Garland and Eric Holder?
Yes. Yes, I do.
So I was curious to find out, and it took me a long time to find this out. I only found one article that told me. But you look up Merrick Garland, you do not see Waco in his biography. You look up Eric Holder, you don't see it in his either. You know, other than the fact
it's
that they were in that office.
Well,
I can't find out what they did.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
It's amazing how America is a lot like every other Western monarch when it comes to being able to say things happened in this way and things didn't happen at all.
Well, history is written by the winners. I mean, the Branch Davidians aren't writing the history. You know, although you can get interviews
I'm not going to say, you know, definitively, uh-huh. I'm never going to speak for God, but those people are going to hell. What was your next topic?
Well, here's the thing, though. Let's consider some of the things that were never considered. You know, they could have left. You know, the ATF and the FBI could have simply left. These people have never posed a danger to anybody else, but they were falsely accused, I think, of pedophilia and massing all kinds of illegal guns. Well, under the Second Amendment, there are no illegal guns, as long as you keep and bear them. And they were using them in self-defense because they were being shot at by the ATF. You know, people don't realize that if the government comes after you unjustly, you have a right to defend yourself against the government. That's the whole purpose of a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. You know, so what was the crime? And what, you know, why didn't they just, you know, and this is what I never understood. I never understood anybody else in government saying, you have to leave. Leave this alone. Diffuse the situation. Go away. It's not like these people are going anywhere. Wait a minute. Hold on. It's not like these people are going anywhere. All they had to do was leave. Stop the siege. Let it calm down. Go in. Talk to Koresh. And investigate the situation. I know these accusations were false because nobody ever complained about them to law enforcement saying, please, they're molesting children in there. You've got to go in and arrest everybody. Nobody ever did that, and they were free to come and go. So that's how I know the accusations were false. Josh.
I was just going to ask a question. Their communication, their ability to speak to people, because you're talking about a free state. That should have been the free state of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I know. that's the question I'm asking.
Where were Texas Rangers?
Yes.
Where was the governor of Texas at the time? Where was the attorney general of Texas? Where was anybody in Texas? Where was the mayor of Waco? Where was the county sheriff of Waco? Where was anybody associated with this? They were all blocked out. I even heard the fire department was blocked from going in after the fire started. They wanted to kill him. There's your government.
Yeah.
This is the worst massacre of government of American citizens in our entire history, and nobody is talking about it on the news except for us. We're it. That is staggering. We're going to take a break for a couple minutes. I'm going to come back with some other articles. I found out some of the other things that happened, the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. We've talked about April 19th for our War for Independence. And we can talk about Boston a little bit more, too. So it's now 8 o'clock. Oh, good time to take a break. So 8 a.m. Central Time. I'll play some music for the – let's keep our revolutionary fervor going. And I'll play a little music and then a couple of commercials. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive. Conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Great Care. And now as an affiliate of Great Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grace Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gracecare.com. That's GRAITHcare.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Great Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. All right, let's get back to news talk. And see what news articles I can rip off the teletype. All right, so I got both my callers back live. I muted you guys simply because I heard background noise on one of them, and I couldn't figure out which one. So Pianki and Josh, you are now back on the line. So let's get to this day in history from Britannica. This is the Encyclopedia Britannica, that wonderful worldwide source. They talk about the American Revolution. Here we go. This day in 1775. They said, launched this day in 1775, battles of Lexington and Concord. The American Revolution was an effort by 13 British colonies in North America with the help from France, Spain, and the Netherlands to win their independence. An effort? Is that what they call it? This is what the British Encyclopedia Britannica calls it, an effort. You know, by 13 British colonies in North America, you know, with the help of these other countries to win their independence. But did they say that we won? Let me look this up and say that we actually won it. I don't think so.
I don't know if that, I don't think they would ever admit that, but I'm also offended that France was a leading factor.
France was.
I'm sorry. I'm Irish.
Well, what's that got to do with anything?
Because how many world wars do we have to save them from, you know?
Well, they saved us in wait a minute. They definitely saved us.
No, the American Revolution. Okay. They got one on us.
Well, World War One.
Okay.
The World War I got into it. If we hadn't gotten into it, they would have stalemated and gone home. There wouldn't have been a World War II. But
I know. Do you want to talk about that?
A little bit, but not a whole lot, because I got a bunch of other things I want to cover today. But
so,
as far as France, have you been to France?
We'll talk about this
Have you been to France? Have you talked to the French?
I've been to Calais. I've never been to Paris.
You mean Calais?
Every time I talk to somebody from a different nation.
Yeah, okay. No, the reason I'm asking, actually, one of the places I went, I took my daughter to Caen, which is spelled C-A-E-N. It's right near the Normandy beaches. That's where we landed with the Normandy invasion. And as soon as they find out, to this day, well, this is back in, this would have been 2007, 2006, I think we're there. Anyway, but they were still, you know, generations later, they found that this still thanking us. I said, I wasn't there. Really, I appreciate it. But thank you. I appreciate it. But I was, you know, but just that they so are so grateful for Americans in northern France who liberated them from Nazi Germany to this day. And these are people, young folks I talked to who weren't even in the war. You know, we're still grateful. The French are wonderful. I've never had a problem with the French. I love the French. The different, which is nice, but it's a very interesting country. You should think about it more. Anyway, so here's what the blurb says. American Revolution also provides its War of Independence, or American Revolutionary War, 1775 to 83. Then it says insurrection. I just find an interesting choice of words from Encyclopedia Britannica, knowing how misused the word insurrection is for January 6th. Insurrection by which 13 of Great Britain's North American colonies won political independence. Actually, we won total independence, you British snoots. Won political independence and went on to form the United States of America. Well, more than a decade of estrangement between the British crown and a large and influential segment of its North American colonies that was caused by British attempts to assert greater control over colonial affairs after having long adhered to a policy of salutary neglect. Oh, this is hysterical. I have to pay to read the rest of it or become a member. That's funny. So what do you think of the British interpretation of our war for independence? Any comments?
Nope. They got exactly what they asked for. You're going to send millions of people across the planet on the other side of the pond, and then you're going to tell them that you're going to have to pay higher taxes, and hey, yeah, you don't really deserve to defend yourself, and then what the hell?
It's like the fact that they call them British colonies, you know, even after. It seems like they were still British colonies.
There is no
king.
No, that's the whole thing, is there is no king on the soil. There is nothing to bow to. There is nothing on the soil. That's across the pond. That's months away on a boat.
Well, the biggest difference, and this is something that should be taught in schools, this is where Pianki is probably going to comment, is that British are subjects. Americans are citizens. The British are not citizens. There's only one citizen, and that's King Charles, or soon to be crowned King Charles. the sovereign is the only citizen in England. Everybody else is a subject, subject to the crown. They still haven't removed that. They still call themselves British subjects. Well, Americans are never subjects. Americans are citizens, sovereign and independent. That's what the war was fought over.
Yes, Americans do not bend knees. You bend your knee to God, maybe somebody.
Well, except for guilty white people that bend to Black Lives Matter, but that's another story. Let me talk about the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. So let's talk about another thing, April 19th, that doesn't get reported. All right, hang on. There's another thing that doesn't get reported, and that's the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. I'll ask both of you at the end of this why it doesn't get reported. So this is Encyclopedia Britannica, the British snoots, that said that we were an insurrection ground. Yeah, right. This is Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, resistance by Polish Jews under Nazi occupation in 1943 to the deportations from Warsaw to the Treblinka extermination camp. At least I got that right. The revolt began on April 19th, 1943. So this is a huge day in history and was crushed 4 weeks later. You know, it sounds a lot like Waco, actually, on May 16th. As part of Adolf Hitler's final solution for ridding Europe of Jews, the Nazis established ghettos in areas under German control until they could be executed. Warsaw Ghetto enclosed at first with barbed wire, but later with a brick wall, 10 feet, 3 meters. It's kind of like the Berlin Wall, it sounds like, 11 miles long. Oh, so here we go. I don't remember this. So it was later brick wall. It was 10 feet or 3 meters high, 11 miles, 18 kilometers, comprised the old Jewish quarter of Warsaw. The Nazis herded Jews. I'm going to get this barbed wire out of the way. The Nazis herded Jews surrounding it into this district until by this 1942, nearly half a million of them lived within its 840 acres. That's not very big. Many had no housing at all. And those who did were crowded in at about 9 people per room. Starvation and disease, especially typhus, killed thousands each month. Beginning July 22, 1942, transfers to the death camp at Treblinka began at a rate of more than 5,000 Jews per day. Between July and September 1942, Nazis shipped about 265,000, or 250,000 Jews from Warsaw to Treblinka. I'm surprised, you know, they've mentioned Auschwitz yet, which is interesting, because Auschwitz is where a lot of the folks went in Poland. So, but I guess Warsaw was close to Treblinka. I don't know. I'll have to look it up. Anyway, it says only some 55,000 remained in the ghetto. As the deportations continued, despair gave way to a determination to resist. A newly formed group, the Jewish Fighting Organization, they sit in Poland here, Zorganizacja Bojowa. Anyway, slowly took effective control of the ghetto. So here we go. This is actually this pretty extensive article. They give me a lot of it. On January 9th, 1943, Heinrich Himmler, the chief of the Nazi paramilitary corps, how about the Gestapo, the secret police? Anyway, the SS, it says, visited the Warsaw Ghetto. Visited? He ordered the deportation of another 8,000 Jews. The January deportations caught the Jews by surprise, and the ghetto thought that the end. Making use of the many hiding places that they had created since April, Jews did not report as ordered. The resistance sprang into action. Jewish fighters could strike quickly, then escape across the rooftops. German troops, on the other hand, moved cautiously and not go down to the cellars. When the German deportation effort ended within a few days, Jews interpreted this as a victory. From then on, the resistance dominated the ghetto. The resistance fortified hideouts and strengthened fighting units in preparation for the next battle, as one leader recalled. See, this is, I didn't know this article was so big. I just discovered this, but I want to continue it because to me, what the Nazis did in the Warsaw Ghetto is exactly what Bill Clinton did to the Branch Davidians. All right? An unpopular religious minority was exterminated. All right. What's the difference? Well, in the case of Germany, there's a lot more people. We're talking half a million as opposed to 80. But basically, the object was the same. Anyway, the article says, having withdrawn, the Germans suspended deportation until April. There we go. Hitler launched a special operation to clear the ghetto in honor of Adolf Hitler's birthday, April 20th. Well, isn't that interesting? Sure, we're not celebrating that tomorrow. April 19th was also the first day of Passover. There we go. The Jewish holy days celebrating freedom from slavery in Egypt. Before dawn, 2,000 SS men and German army troops moved into the area with tanks, sounds like Waco, rapid-fire artillery, and ammunition trailers. While most remaining Jews hid in bunkers, the Branch Davidians, pre-arrangement, the ZOB, and a few independent bands of Jewish guerrillas, in all some 1,500 strong, opened fire with their motley weaponry, pistols, a few rifles, one machine gun, and homemade bombs. Sounds like the Branch Davidians, destroying a number of tanks, killing German troops, and holding off reinforcements trying to enter the ghetto. The Germans withdrew in the evening. The next day, the fighting resumed and casualties mounted. The Germans used gas, just like they did at Waco, police dogs, just like Waco, and flames, just like Waco. I'm adding the just like Waco. That's not in the Encyclopedia Britannica. In an effort to rout the Jews from their bunkers, leaving the city, that's what they used to, they called the Branch Davidian, the compound, leaving the city under a pall of smoke for days. On the third day, the Germans' tactics shifted. They no longer entered the ghetto in large groups, but roamed it in small bands. Then they made a decision to burn the entire ghetto, just like Waco. See, the parallels are unmistakable, unbelievable. This is the Germans had planned to liquidate the ghetto in 3 days. The Jews held out for nearly a month. Do you know how they held out? Privately owned firearms, folks. Second Amendment. You know, the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto were fighting the Nazis with guns, with private guns, any guns they could get their hands on. Had they had more guns, had we sent guns to the Warsaw Ghetto? Had we shipped guns in, clandestinely put guns in the hands of Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto? They might have been able to fight back successfully. But we didn't do that, though. How about that? Back to the article. The Germans had planned to liquidate the ghetto in 3 days. The Jews held out for nearly a month. About how long is the Waco siege? 51 days. Comments? I can take a break here. Pierre, did you have a comment?
Can I say something offensive?
Oh.
Not really that offensive. During World War II, if the Pope would have called on Catholics to swarm all of Europe and Asia, none of that stuff would have happened.
Yeah, if we'd taken...
They would have been overwhelmed.
If we took the ships of Jews that escaped from Nazi Germany and said, think that Roosevelt did, things have been different too, but we sent them back. There's a really terrible.
No. Yeah, dude. Yeah, no, I get. Okay. Yes, that's obviously terrible.
Well, yeah.
We already did that. We already experienced this though, you know? So,
okay. All right.
Secondary.
Do you see the
parallel?
Do you see the parallel between the Nazis and Waco, and his Nazis and Waco?
Josh, hold on, stop.
Pianki?
Said you breaking up pretty bad, but this is what the kids in Tennessee need to be taught, where they're marching to remove guns and take away guns. They need to be taught history. And I posted this in reply to it. I say it is not the gun laws or infringement on law-abiding people, gun weapon rights. It is the person who uses these instruments in an illegal way. Why mislead these young people into this belief? They will remember you for this. It is the human behavior, not the gun. So,
yeah, that's a good point.
Weapons and better weapons, things would have been different.
Yeah. Now, at what point was I breaking up? Because I can go over this again. Do you remember where I was? How's it sound now? I mean, I hate having it broken up. Okay. All right. Do you think I checked it, or could you get most of it?
Now it's coming back. It came back for a brief. No, we got the gist of it, but, you know, it was every other word.
Yeah, see, that's all right. Let me do it this time without the commentary, because I really think it's critical. Now, I might have been shouting because I got excited when I read it.
Maybe
so it's
you
okay
need to
now.
Blow up yesterday, but you overrunning
yeah.
the radio.
Okay, well, I've got my gain pretty low. Let me back in front of it. Let me try this again. So this is Encyclopedia Britannica, Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. I'm just going to read it, and then we can talk about it. Resistance by Polish Jews under Nazi occupation in 1943 to the deportations from Warsaw to the Treblinka extermination camp. The revolt began on April 19th, 1943, and was crushed 4 weeks later on May 16th. As part of Adolf Hitler's final solution for ridding Europe of Jews, the Nazis established ghettos in areas of German control to Jews until they could be executed. Warsaw Ghetto enclosed at first with barbed wire, but later with a brick wall 10 feet high and 11 miles long, comprised the old Jewish quarter of Warsaw. The Nazis herded Jews from surrounding areas into this district until by the summer of 1942, nearly 500,000 of them lived within its 840 acres. Many had no housing at all, and those who did were crowded in at about 9 people per room. Starvation and disease, typhus, killed thousands. Beginning July 22, 1942, transfers to the death camp at Treblinka began at a rate of more than 5,000 Jews per day. Between July and September 1942, the Nazis shipped about 265,000 Jews from Warsaw to Treblinka. Only some 55,000 remained in the ghetto. As the deportations continued, despair gave way to determination to resist. A newly formed group, the Jewish Fighting Organization, the ZOB, slowly took control of the ghetto. On January 9, 1943, and scroll down, Heinrich Himmler, the chief of the SS, the Nazi paramilitary corps, visited the Warsaw Ghetto. He ordered the deportation of another 8,000 Jews. The January deportations caught the Jews by surprise, and the ghetto residents thought that the end had come. Making use of the many hiding places they had created since April, Jews did not report as ordered. The resistance sprang into action. Jews would strike quickly, then escape across the rooftop. German troops, on the other hand, moved cautiously and would not go down to cellars. When the German deportation effort ended within a few days, Jews interpreted this as a victory. From then on, the resistance dominated the ghetto. The resistance fortified hideouts and strengthened fighting units in preparation for the next battle. As one ZOB leader recalled, having withdrawn, the Germans suspended deportations until April 19th, when Himmler launched a special operation to in honor of Adolf Hitler's birthday, April 20th. It was also the first day of Passover, the Jewish holy day celebrating freedom from slavery in Egypt. Before dawn, 2,000 SS men and German army troops moved into the area with tanks, rapid-fire artillery, and ammunition trailers. While most remaining Jews hid in bunkers, by pre-arrangement, the ZOB and a few independent bands of Jewish guerrillas, in all some 1,500 strong, opened fire with their motley weaponry, pistols, a few rifles, one machine gun, and homemade bombs, destroying tanks, killing German troops, and reinforcements trying to enter the ghetto. The Germans withdrew in the evening. The next day, the fighting resumed and casualties mounted. The Germans used gas, police dogs, and flamethrowers in an effort to rout the Jews from their bunkers, leaving the city under a pall of smoke for days. On the third day, the Germans' tactics shifted. They no longer entered the ghetto in large groups, but roamed in small bands. Then they made a decision to burn the entire ghetto. The Germans had planned to liquidate it for 3 days. The Jews held out for nearly a month. Resistance fighters succeeded in hiding in the sewers, even though the Germans tried first to flood them and force them out with smoke bombs. Not until May 8th did the Nazis manage to take the ZOB headquarters bunker. Civilians hiding there surrendered, but many of the surviving ZOB fighters took their own lives to avoid being captured alive. So did Mordecai Anielwitz, the charismatic young commander of the underground army. One battle continued until May 16th, becoming sporadic as Jewish ammunition was exhausted. Total casualty figures for the uprising are uncertain, but the Germans likely lost several hundred soldiers during the 28 days that it took them to kill or deport over 40,000 Jews. SS Major General Jürgen Stroop survived the coup de grace by the dynamiting of the Great Synagogue of Warsaw. Thereupon, he wrote his report, "The Warsaw Ghetto is no more." Warsaw Ghetto uprising was nothing less than a revolution in Jewish history. Jews had resisted the Nazis in force. The significance and symbolic resonance of the uprising went far beyond those who fought and died. As Anielwitz wrote in his colleague, Yitzhak Zuckerman, he says, My life's dream has now been realized. Jewish self-defense in the ghetto is now an accomplished fact. I have been witness to the magnificent, heroic struggle of the Jewish fighters. Just a little bit more here. Some aspects of the Warsaw Uprising were common to all ghetto attractions. Resistance came when all hope for survival and when trust in the leadership of the Nazi-created Judenrat, Jewish councils, was lost. More than 300,000 had died at the extermination camps. The rail cars were at the station. The fighters knew that they were bound to lose. There was no longer a choice between life and death, but the honor of the Jewish people was at stake. They chose to die fighting and to inflict casualties on the enemy. Jewish fighters faced overwhelmingly superior forces, even if they are understated with losses. The German figures reported after all reflect the mismatch. Of the Jews captured, The Germans shot 7,000 and transported 7,000 to the death camp at Treblinka, 15,000 to Majdanek, and they're not familiar with that camp, and the remainder to forced labor camps. The Germans captured 9 rifles, 15 pistols, and several hundred grenades, explosives, and mines. Among the Germans and their collaborators, the stated losses were 16 dead and 85 wounded. So just to put this perspective, the Jews in the Warsaw ghetto, who had abandoned all hope, who were going to be killed or one way or another anyway, held off the German Nazi armed forces, the SS, for a month with 9 rifles, 59 pistols, and several hundred hand grenades and explosives and mines. That is staggering.
The rest of, I don't accept that only because the Russians, the Soviets wouldn't have taken that measure. The Africans might have, but the Soviets wouldn't have taken that measure.
They weren't there. The Soviets, the Russians later. I mean, what the Russians did to pull their story was World War II, both the Nazis and the communists. Kind of the same thing, really.
You think that the Soviets and the Nazis were the same thing when it came to the treatment of the Jews?
I don't remember a Soviet final solution or an extermination, but the Russians, from the Tsars through the communist dictators and Lenin, I mean, there were pogroms. I mean, Russian Jews were treated horribly. You know, a lot of the Jews in Israel are Russian descendants.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's not true.
Well, let's get back to the main topic. Do you see the similarities between the Jewish uprising and the events of their lives in the Warsaw Ghetto and the complete obliteration of the Nazis and what Bill Clinton did, you know, on a smaller scale to the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas?
Are you asking me to compare what happened to the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas, to anything that had to do with the Holocaust?
No, I'm talking about the Warsaw Ghetto. Yes, that had to do with the Holocaust, but I'm not talking about the whole Holocaust, because obviously Clinton did not put truckloads of Jews or anybody or Branch Davidians
in the death
camps.
The Warsaw Ghetto?
Yeah, just the Warsaw Ghetto in Waco. That's what I'm comparing.
Man, that's... I'd probably steer clear of that comparison. I mean, both are terrible.
I just made that comparison.
You think that's the same thing as the Branch Davidians?
Well, it's a different scale, but the outcome is the same.
They
brought in the tanks, they brought in the flamethrowers, they brought in the pyrotechnic devices, they burned the place down and bulldozed them into the ground.
Yeah, I would probably go a lot farther than what you're talking about. No. That's
go a lot further in terms of what?
Obviously terrible.
What am I missing?
Waco compared to anything in World War II?
Yeah. Let me put you on hold for a bit. I'll give you a chance to kind of recoup and get it going here. Pianki, you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. You're making reference to some bad actors, and those bad actors still exist today in their attempts. And one thing in common is that they don't want the people to have the ability to defend themselves, to protect themselves, then and today.
Yeah, let's bring up the point you were talking about earlier, because this is really good, that the whole idea of the Second Amendment is totally warped. And this is something that we've talked about. In fact, you made comment of my argument, which is very short. You know, I can do it in bullet point fashion, that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, that all rights are absolute, because if they're not absolute, then they become a government privilege if the government can infringe upon them in any way. The Second Amendment has an absolute right of the right to keep and bear arms. And the reason that that is an absolute right is because if you ever need them for self-defense, they have to be instantly available. So that is the supreme law of the land. So any gun control law is statutory because it comes under, based on guns, that comes under the Constitution is statutory law. Let me make actually, I should put the other point in here too, that how do I phrase this? The Second Amendment never mentions the word use. There's no use of firearms in the Second Amendment. It's only the absolute right to keep and bear, because there are legal uses and illegal uses. And since rights are absolute, it would be absurd to make the use of firearms a right. It isn't, because you can use them both legally and illegally. But what the government can't do, what they cannot do, because it comes under statutory law, which is subordinate to the Constitution, is make laws that touch upon the right to keep and bear, because any such law is subordinate to and basically is overturned by the Second Amendment. So if you separate the right to keep and bear, which is absolute in the law of the land of the Constitution, with statutory law governing the uses of firearms, both legal and illegal, everything makes sense. So people would just be taught that, that the use of firearms comes under statutory law, of legal and illegal, and the right to keep and bear arms is under constitutional law, which is supreme to statutory law, then we shouldn't have a problem. But we do. I got to find a shorter way to explain that.
Yeah, you're right. As we go back again, it's the people, it's the person, human being, not the weapon.
Yeah.
And some human beings have a mental capacity that don't allow them to use a weapon, or when they do, they tend to use it in an illegal manner against innocent people.
Well, let's wrestle with this concept a little bit, because the argument is that, well, we can't have people with mental health issues carrying firearms. And I'm saying that in our free society, that you have rights unless you want to go through due process and take them away. And red flag laws are not due process. If a neighbor accuses you of being a right-wing wacko and you have to have your guns removed because you threaten them, that's not due process. And yet that's what red flag laws do.
But you know what? Uh-huh. You got a good point there. Because the way it is, you can only know the ill intent of a person after they commit the ill intent. You can't read their mind, although I understand that there's some Department of Defense is wanting to know how we can read people's minds. But right now, you can't read a person's mind. Matter of fact, even a person themselves don't know when they want to reach that particular level.
Yep. So what the left wants to tell you is that you can prevent mass shootings through laws. What I'm saying is, in a free society, you can't. In a communist society, you make everything illegal. Gun ownership, which is what the left wants. They want a communist society where nobody has rights. People only have permission of the government to do what the government tells them they can do. Well, we can't live that way. Now, one of the risks in a free society is that we don't arrest people for what we think they might do. That's called prior restraint. What we do is give the law-abiding the maximum freedom. So in other words, we do not persecute, prosecute, limit the rights of the vast majority of the law-abiding citizens of this country, because a very small number of people are committing assassinations and doing horrible things. What we do is we give the freedom. Well, we don't give the freedom. We're born with the freedom, and the government doesn't infringe upon the freedom. But what you can do is defend yourself against those few assassins and horrible people that are out there. And that's the whole point. So what the government cannot do is take away the means of our self-defense at the same time as saying that they're going to protect us and keep us safe. That's not their job either. Their job is to protect our rights. So in a free society, there's always the risk that a horrible thing might happen because people will take advantage and break the law. But until they break the law, they're a law-abiding citizen. Let's get to intent, because there is a point where if somebody is, broadcasting on Facebook, saying that they're going to, blow up or shoot, that's like a confession to me. Now you've got a reason to investigate them. And if you find plans, blueprints of a school or plans of a school, or if you find evidence that they've actually been plotting this plan, that they're in that, what do they call that? there's a legal word for when you're planning an operation but you haven't done it yet. I don't know, intent or something. Anyway, so the intent to commit the crime, that's different. Now that person can be gone after. You know, if you've got terrorist plans, I forgot what the word, I'll think about it at some point along the way. But what you can't do is have blanket laws that just take guns away from people. You can't have blanket prior restraint. But if you can demonstrate through due process that someone is genuinely dangerous, especially by their own admission, that's different. You can head off a terrorist act. You know, if the evidence out there, they're really planning to do something. They bought the gun, the ammo, the plans, they've got all that stuff, they have the intent to do harm. I don't see any reason why law enforcement can't move in at that point. But there's that line between demonstrated intent and people that just want to take guns away, prior restraint of someone that might have depression, mental health issues, things like that. Pianchi?
Good point.
Yeah. Well, let's go on to Waco. Let's see what the Encyclopedia Britannica says.
Let me ask you something now.
Sure.
How much more stricter can background tests, background exploration go?
Well, see, I don't know if you want to do that, though, because if you want to do the left would use that to limit firearms. Say, for example, that we had a political test. You know, say, for example, that the government of the insurrection of Brandon doesn't want me to own guns because I call them the insurrection of Brandon. Well, you're anti-government. And we'll get into the Fox trial in a minute. They're like, you're denying, you're an election denier. You're politically dangerous. You believe fake news. You're unstable. You don't honor and bow to the government of Brandon. No, I don't. But what if they have a political test? And then the psychologists say, well, you know what? You've got some paranoid delusions here. You've got some evil thoughts and things that the election was we consider you unstable. You know, and then they say, okay. You know, I say, well, we really don't think you should own guns because we've determined psychologically you're unstable. I mean, that's how the left could do it. They could, if you want to do any kind of evaluation, a background check, to include anything other than criminal record, already established due process recorded events, you got a problem. I've got a problem with that. So what do you want to include in the background other than crimes?
That's what the people in Tennessee is. You got certain politicians like this Chris O'Brien is making reference that the background check should be more stringent. I'm asking, well, what do you call stringent?
Like what do you call say, background
it
check?
Should be.
Well, I mean, what is
well,
the purpose
absolutely.
Of
that? What are you going to go back to a 50-year-old person's high school years?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, too. Do you get your rights back when you get out of jail?
You should.
So someone's committed a felony. You know, they get their voting rights back, or in some places they don't get the voting rights back, and they don't get their gun rights back. Well, wait a minute. You just said they served their time. You're releasing them back onto the street. You're saying that they're safe to come back on the street. You can't let people back on the street to come back,
but you don't want their gun rights to come back.
Well, exactly. That's a problem.
You want them to be able to vote the Democrats, right?
Well, that's what a lot of folks in prison do. That's one of the arguments in Florida. But here's the thing. My contention is that if someone is out of jail and they're paroled and they've served their time, then you have to give them all the rights back, including their gun rights. Otherwise, if they're still a violent person, if they're like, how you do this, you're likely to commit harm, don't control, then. But why do you assume that somebody who's committed a violent crime, say bank robbery, okay, so you rob a bank and you do it with a gun, all right? So for the rest of your life, you lose your gun rights, but you might get your voting rights back. Why would you assume that somebody at 18 who robs a bank is still going to be a violent person at 54 and not able to own guns? That doesn't make any sense. So what is the purpose of background? Rights back, or you should get your rights back after you've served your time. So the only people that really can't own guns are those that are in jail or parole. Right?
That's right. So why do you need a background check? Instead of teaching these kids about doing away with weapons, they should teach these kids about the foundation of the country and the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And also stories about, like, the Waco uprising, not the Waco, the Warsaw uprising, Warsaw ghetto uprising.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there are things that I didn't know about it that I discovered this morning from this Britannica article. Although what they say about Waco, because I do know a lot about Waco, is pretty horrendous. But I think the parallels are exact. I think what the Nazis did in the Warsaw ghetto, that ultimately end up killing the Jews there or sending them off to a death camp, is exactly the same as what Bill Clinton did and Janet Reno did on the FBI ATF. Those Nazis, and I'll say it, did to the Branch Davidians. There was no due process. They didn't back off and wait for them to come out and get arrested. What was the rush? Why did they have to end it? April 19th, Patriots Day. See, the left is big on symbolism. I think that was the point. What's the difference between what the British did, attacking our colonies, where we had to defend ourselves April 19th, 1775, on the Lexington Battle, and what Clinton did to the Indians, attacking them and killing all them on April 19th? April 19th is a very interesting day in history. Jackie, you can think about it. We don't have any guests today. Everybody's bailed on me.
You ain't paying them right. Did you give them a smoke break?
I don't pay anybody yet. I could. I'm working on it. Hey, listen, if I get a benefactor, you know, I've tried to email Elon Musk and say, look, dude, you know, you gave $44 billion to buy Twitter. I could have saved you 43.8 of it if you'd simply marketed our vaccine product liability bill. I sent out that email several times, but the minions just don't let it get through. But if Elon Musk gave her back to Action Radio, I would pay all my folks here. All right. About this Waco siege, Britannica. Then we'll take another break. And then Josh on the line, I'll bring him back in a little bit. But here's what they say about Waco. They call it the Waco siege, a 51-day standoff between Branch Davidians and federal agents that ended on April 19th, 1993, when the religious group's compound near Waco, Texas, was destroyed in a fire. Nearly 80 people were killed. The compound was destroyed in a fire. Why? Because the government started the fire. They sent in poison gas that was... They opened the building up so the wind would go through, and they fired pyrotechnic devices, which started the fire. But they don't say that in Britannica. So in other words, what seemed a very reasonable article on the Warsaw Ghetto and what the Nazis did, who are not favored by the British, completely becomes a propaganda piece when it comes to the Branch Davidians, where our federal government, you know, stormtroopers do seem to be favored by Britannica. I'm not sure why. Let me read the article. If I break up, let me know. The Branch Davidians, by Ben Roden in 1959 as an offshoot of the Davidian Seventh-day Adventist Church, like I said earlier, which had been established by Victor Hutef several decades earlier. Hutef, that's H-O-U-T-E-F-F, his group eventually moved to a farm some 10 miles east of Waco, Texas, but by 1962, Roden and his followers had taken possession of the settlement, which was known as Mount Carmel. That's C-A-R-M-E-L. There, the Branch Davidians lived a life preparing for the imminent return of Jesus. America, no problem. However, in the mid-1980s, the group became embroiled in a power struggle, and by the end of the decade, Vernon Howell, later called David Koresh, had become head of the Mount Carmel community, at least they call it a community. He soon began taking spiritual wives, several of whom were reportedly as young as 11. Yeah, I don't know about that. Well, I think that's one of those false accusations, but we'll see. Allegations of child abuse and Koresh's launch of a retail gun business got the attention of legal authorities. Well, in fact, the local authorities, because they never did anything about them. Anyway, it says, believing that the group was illegally stockpiling weapons, the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, this is where Texas should have stepped in, right, obtained both an arrest warrant for Koresh and a search warrant for the compound. On February 28, 1993, more than 70 ATF agents raided the complex. See, this is the problem. Why would you send it? Did they call in advance? Did they make an appointment? Did they say, David, we have a search warrant, we want to talk to you? Did they give them a chance to voluntarily comply? Did they do anything that they would do for almost anybody else? No. they sent in 70 ATF agents shooting. What would you do? Shoot back? Why not? If you think they're trying to kill you, what would you do? Especially if you've been tipped off the day ahead of time. It says gunfire erupted, though it is uncertain who fired first. Yeah, shot heard around the world. And during the two-hour battle, four federal agents were killed and more than a dozen injured. In addition, six civilians nearly died. Yeah. Nearly 900 law enforcement officers subsequently descended on the compound, including FBI hostage negotiators. Some negotiations, right? During phone calls, Koresh engaged in Bible babble and threatened violence, and though he stated, okay, all right, I'm gonna get away from this because I don't believe any of what they're saying here. Let me see if I can get some more stats. At approximately 6 a.m. on April 19th, 1993, that's 30 years ago today, the FBI began spraying tear gas at the complex with CS gas, which is more than just gas. Then it says soon after, the Branch Davidians began firing weapons. For more than 5 hours, armored vehicles, some of which punched holes in the walls, deposited 400 tear gas canisters inside the compound. Those armed vehicles were actually tanks. So this article's wrong. The Branch Davidians, okay, this says, some of which punched holes into the walls. Yes, they did. Deposited 400 tear gas canisters inside the compound. 400. Think about it. 400 tear gas canisters. All right? Well, that's an insane amount, especially a military-grade gas like CS gas, which it was. Then it says 1140. It's 11:40 a.m. The assault ended. Some 25 minutes later, the Branch Davidians set several fires. That's not true. And at 12:25, gunfire was heard inside the compound. Due to safety concerns, firefighters were not allowed into the area for another 15 minutes. In other words, the ATF FBI blocked the fire department from putting out the fire. Okay, that's what really happened. This is due to safety concerns. This is a BS article. This is while 9 people managed to escape, the rest died. Investigators ultimately found 75 bodies, 25 of which belonged to children. Wasn't that special? A number of the deceased had been fatally shot, including Koresh, while some of the wounds appeared to be self-inflicted, others did not. Yeah, I don't believe that for a second. It says the government's handling of the situation drew sharp criticism, and that would be Janet Reno, later regret for authorizing the raid. Oh, yeah, right. While the government long maintained that it was not involved in starting this or spreading the fire, which, of course, they were, in 1999, it was revealed that some of the tear gas used by the FBI was flammable. Oh, big surprise. Later that year, Reno appointed John Danforth, a lawyer and former Republican senator, to investigate the raid. So Janet Reno appointed the person to investigate Janet Reno. Anybody see a problem with that? Then it says his probe concluded in 2000 found that the did not cause the fire. Well, big surprise. Nor did it shoot at the compound. I don't believe that. Regardless of such findings, some people viewed the Waco siege as governmental abuse of authority. No, I view it as mass murder. And it spurred the growth of militias. In 1995, on the second anniversary of the raid, Timothy McVeigh carried out the Oklahoma City bombing, which killed 168 people. That's another thing that happened on April. We'll get to that one next. Pionki, what do you think of the Waco? Anything we should cover on Waco?
Well, Dan Ashcroft brings some chills to your body. Governor Ashcroft?
No, Ashcroft wasn't there. Governor Attorney General Ashcroft was later. But
he
this is Danforth, Senator Danforth. Beg your pardon?
Ashcroft comes from Missouri.
But I don't remember him being involved.
Danforth tutored Clarence Thomas.
Danforth did? Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, any comments about Waco that we should cover before I move on to Oklahoma City?
Yeah. No, that was clearly messed up. And I don't know if you can sue somebody from beyond the grave, but we should definitely hold people that are still alive today accountable because, yeah,
well, that would
they're
be,
not that old.
That would be Eric Holder and Merrick Garland, who are number three under Janet Reno during the massacre at Waco.
That's so – yes. Okay. I'm not going to say anything else. Yes. That.
So let's see what Britannica says about the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, I can tell you what I've actually read articles what the New American says about it, and it's a totally different thing. But let's just take apart this, because this is what people are reading. Oklahoma City bombing, terrorist attack on Oklahoma City on April 14th, 1995, 2 years after the massacre at Waco. That's my comment. It says in which a massive homemade bomb composed of more than 2 tons of ammonium nitrate fertilizer and fuel oil concealed in a truck, the famous Ryder truck, exploded, heavily damaging the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building. A total of 168 people were killed, including 19 children, and more than 500 were injured. The building was later razed, and a park was built on the site. The bombing remained the terrorist attack on the U.S. soil, the attack on the World Trade Center in New York City, and the Pentagon outside Washington, D.C. in 2001. And those were September 11th, so it's not an April thing. It says, although at first suspicion wrongly focused on Middle Eastern terrorists, attention quickly centered on Timothy McVeigh, who had been arrested shortly after the explosion for a traffic violation, and his friend Terry Nichols. Both were former U.S. Army soldiers and were associated with the extreme right wing and the militant patriot movement. Let's stop right there. Okay. Does anyone know that Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols were veterans? You know, they swore to uphold the Constitution. So why would veterans blow up the Alfred P. Murrah Building 2 years after the government massacre at Waco? Any thoughts? I'm not excusing it. I'm just trying to understand it. What was their goal? Has anybody ever looked into the motivations? Has anybody discussed the writings? I'm going to do this in a subsequent. Again, I'm not defending them because it was wrong to do. But
no,
the government blew the building.
Didn't he say his motivations are from a book?
Don't know. Which book?
I don't know the book.
I think you're confusing with the Aryan Nation. The Aryan Nation books, whatever that book is. Another one, the Turner
Diaries.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know it either. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. All right.
But
all right. So let's, let me ask you.
Isn't that what he said? What he was doing?
I'm not sure. So I say I gotta refresh my memory on that. I wasn't planning to cover this. I just wanted to sort of delve into it a little bit. But why would Army? Here's a story too. I remember hearing a story about Timothy McVeigh. Apparently, he was a medic. And he saved a ton of soldiers. I mean, not a ton, but he did some pretty heroic things in combat to save soldiers' lives. So when they talk about the right wing, the extreme right wing, of course, the extreme right wing is anarchy. The left wing is terror. And then it talks about militant patriot movement. The patriot movement is America first, is the Constitution, is our founding documents. So what they're really obviously it was the wrong thing to explode an ammonium nitrate bomb, you know, in the Alfred P. Murrah Building. But what they were protesting was the fact that the government massacred people 2 years earlier. And that's not talked about. They're just talked about as terrorists and trying to demonize the patriot movement. Well, what's wrong with the patriot movement? It's being patriots who want the government in compliance with the Constitution. So the real terrorists are actually the ones in government. You know, the folks in the Army, you talk to anybody who's a veteran, and the first thing they will tell you is, I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution for the rest of my life. It's not a one-time oath. They don't suddenly abandon their oath when they leave the armed forces. I talked to a lot of veterans. In this area in Florida, we have tons of veterans. So it would make that these two would want to protest what happened in Waco. But what they did was horrible. They did it completely the wrong way. But here's the other question. The New American article talks about this, that the explosion at the Murrah Building could not have been done by an ammonium nitrate bomb. Explosions from a truck go out. And if you look at a picture of the explosion of the bomb, it looks more like a demolition charge because a lot of the building was brought straight down. And a lot of engineers and the general talked about this. They said there's no way that that bomb from Timothy McVeigh could have blown up the building the way it was blown up. So now the plot gets more interesting. Now we get stuff. You know, where's the wreckage in the Pentagon from the airplane? You know, why did the towers come down when they're hit at the top? Why would an airliner make a steel reinforced building collapse? So there's a lot of questions on the whole Timothy McVeigh thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Questions? Okay. Anyway, Nichols got life in prison. Timothy McVeigh was But what was really interesting is that they, let me see what, this is the part that, this is the scariest part of this article. It says, although McVeigh and Nichols were not directly connected with any major political group, what? You just said they were right-wing militia. This is right here. Although McVeigh and Nichols were not directly connected with any major political group, they held views characteristic of the broad patriot movement, which feared plots by the U.S. federal government and corporate elites. Well, I think COVID kind of proved us right, didn't it? You know, yeah, COVID killed, the government killed 1 million people. COVID killed about 6,000. Fascinating. But what is this broad patriot
and
movement?
What,
why
and
is,
what
why
city?
Is, what, what?
New York killed like 18,000. Detroit killed like 6,000. Chicago killed who knows.
The government policy and the hospital policy is what killed the
I'm just saying
the
big
actual
numbers,
people.
Big numbers.
All right. So here, let me show the COVID math. So the COVID math is pretty simple. All right. The people that died from COVID is only about 6% of those who died with COVID, and that comes from the CDC. So 6% of 1,060,000. All our friends who are doctors, Dr. Zelenko, a lot of folks have said that they could have saved about 90% of that from COVID with early treatment. Well, 90% of 60,000 is would leave you 6,000. So only about 6,000 people had to die or would have died from COVID if proper free knowledge, information, and early treatments were in place. So COVID killed about 6,000. The government killed about 1 million. And they're killing more now with the vaccine. So tell me who the terrorists are. There's nothing more of a terrorist.
I have
There's nothing
kind
more
to say to that.
Okay. Well, you don't have to say something kind. But I just find it fascinating that the Encyclopedia Britannica, which is supposed to, you know, be neutral and actually present the information, like they seem to do pretty well with the article on the Warsaw Ghetto, completely lost it when they talk about Murrah, Timothy McVeigh, when they talk about Waco. So authoritarian plots by the U.S. federal government, the U.S. federal government is authoritarian. I think we proved that with what they proved that with their actions. So it says at most extreme, the Patriot Movement denied the legitimacy of the federal government and law enforcement. Well, there was nothing that was legitimately done at Waco. Then it says one manifestation of the righteous upsurge, the formation of armed militia groups, which according to some sources claimed a national membership of almost 30,000. Oh boy, that's big. By the mid-1990s, the militias justified their existence by claiming a right to armed self-defense against an allegedly oppressive government. We do have a right of self-defense against an oppressive government. So that's true. So in other words, the patriots are right. The militias are right. This article is wrong. Then it says, in this context, the date of the Oklahoma City attack was doubly significant on two notable anniversaries. It marked both Patriots Day, the anniversary of the American rebellion against British authority. That's misnamed too. And the date on which federal agents brought the Waco siege to a nation by raiding the compound. They didn't raid the compound. They killed everybody. Anyway, I've had enough of this. But that's basically the point. So any comments on the Oklahoma City attack and subsequent mischaracterization?
Yeah, no. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I was just going to say that, there are unforgivable things, and people should be held accountable, especially if they're still alive today.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you will with that information.
Okay. Pianki, do you have a comment before I take a break?
Yes, you ought to take a break.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Let me scroll up top here and see what I've got. I figured out a way to go, you know, from the ground up and the top down on my commercials here. So we'll be right back. And here we go. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Hello, this is Greg Penglis for our newest shooting range here in Milton, Florida. Stand Your Ground. My friend Jason Myers and crew are creating an incredible facility for our city. Stand Your Ground is located at 6632 Elva Street. The phone number is 850-789-1776. Their email is standyourground1776@gmail.com. Here you'll find either in process or already going an indoor shooting range, axe throwing, archery, a rage room, self-defense classes, concealed carry weapons classes, security license training, paintball, a full-service gun store, and 24/7 online ordering. So come on down or contact them by phone, email, or website and learn how you can best stand your ground. You know, folks are always asking, you know, how can I help Action Radio? How can I support you? This is one way. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. Okay, we're back. I've got Pianchi and I've got Josh on the line. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it, because otherwise I would have had to talk for 3 hours by myself, something I was really not looking forward to. I'm surprised we haven't heard from Marco. Marco's in the Netherlands. He's online, unless he got busy with a meeting or something like that. So he listens to us, you know, in the afternoons somewhere in the Netherlands. We'll have to find out where exactly. But we're international. And so we have a lot of listeners in different countries. And I'm curious. In fact, I looked up an article on Vietnam today, because Vietnam has been listening to us. Marco says, I'm here. That's funny. Marco, if you have any views on anything we're talking about for April 19th, please feel free. I'd be curious to get the European perspective. I forgot where I was going with this. Anyway, but it's an interesting day here. this April 19th. And for me personally, it's April and October are the months when things happen. So nothing's happened to me significantly this month yet, but there's still some months to go. But generally, April and October is when his hometown is Roermond, R-O-E-R-M-O-N-D. He works in Weert, W-E-E-R-T. I probably mispronounced those. Roermond is a town with a rich history. We've been through some battles. Yeah, I'm sure. Well, let's hear about it. You know, as much as you want to talk about it, I know Europeans don't want to talk about World War II all day, every day, but that's where it happened. So, you know, that in Japan. So we need a Japanese correspondent as well on the show. Anyway, I want to get away from the articles. I've had enough reading, but I want to talk about something that happened yesterday that is staggeringly dangerous for this country. And that being the fact that Fox News completely caved and wimped out and paid Dominion, the company that stole our election with election machines, $787 million. You know, that's on the way to $1 billion. They only have $4 billion in assets. So they paid almost one quarter of their entire assets. Also, they wouldn't have to admit what they already know, that the election was stolen. This, to me, is a tragedy of monumental proportions because, first of all, the idea that Dominion could even bring the lawsuit, the company that stole the election with their machines, is bad enough. The fact that Fox, a news agency protected by the First Amendment, caved to them and didn't say, hell yeah, we think you stole the election. That's not slander. That's not libel. Go ahead. Sue us for defamation. Now we can prove that you stole the election. That's what they should have done because there's enough evidence out there to do it. Trump would have helped them. You know, Tucker Carlson would have helped him. He knows the election was stolen. Everybody, Maria Bartiromo, she knows. I mean, they all know it was stolen. Sean Hannity knows, whether they say it or not, because it's impossible to believe that Joe Biden could have beat Donald Trump in a fair election. I mean, anybody with a brain knows that the election was stolen. So what's Fox's problem?
Yeah,
Go ahead.
I don't understand
Bianca.
Them caving in like that also.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. So I guess that when black folks say that whites owe them reparations, they should be allowed to be sued too, right?
Mm-hmm, sure. Basically, well, there's another thing. You know, why can't we sue Pfizer? You know, I was thinking actually the FTC should sue Pfizer. You know, when they said that their vaccines were safe and effective, well, they're not vaccines, and they're dangerous and deadly. So you know, you want to talk about a mischaracterization. But that's a little different. So there was another example that someone provided. It's one of my articles somewhere. I'll find it. But there are other things. But let's just deal with this one. And I'm going to ask Jonathan about this Monday because this is his ballpark. Is how is it that Fox News, Rupert Murdoch, as liberal as he is, first of all, he's Australian, so he doesn't have the American tradition of freedom and independence. But how dare they? Now, let me quote Greta Thunberg. How dare they wimp out and let down the entire First Amendment, the American media. They've let down everybody, caving into a company, you know, which they reported on. And that company we know stole the election. Their machines are designed to steal elections. That's why they make them, you know. And I think they're from Venezuela or Canada. I'm not sure where Dominion's headquartered. But Dominion, why is it that a company that makes machines that the government uses to count our votes in our sacred elections, everybody talks about, especially the left, our elections are sacred. You can't interfere with the vote. That's voter suppression. Well, there's nothing more voter suppressing than stealing the election itself. So why can't we say that?
Yeah, they allow to sue, and then they still allow to sell you more machines.
Yeah, exactly. So let's see if they're safe and effective. Well, I think they're effective, but not for what they're intended for. But Dominion is a company that makes fraudulent voting machines with internet modems that are designed to steal elections. Well, why can't I say that? I just did say that. Oh, Dominion, if you want to come after me, spell my name right. P-E-N-G-L-I-S. I'm right here. Call me up, 215-383-3832.
That's why come no machine should be – well, I don't know why they didn't go back to paper ballots on federal elections.
We have
States
a bill
to do
that.
What they want.
Well, you know, Diane, who's on the show, she's busy these days, but Diane Warner, who does our election integrity report, you know, she wrote a bill. She says it's our bill, but it's really her bill because she wrote most of it. But her bill, election integrity, which we've given to our state legislators who did not put it into this session like they should have, called for all paper ballots, the elimination of all voting machines, hand counted on the premises, you know, before they send no transportation, videotaped counting by three counters who are bonded. And then my addition was that all voter registrations expire midnight, December 31st. And the point of that is so that the voter rolls are clean every year. So if you combine new voter registrations every year, just like your car, if you can do it for your car, you can do it for your vote, right? So new voter registrations every year, only paper ballots, no machines, all paper ballots hand counted on the premises at the precinct with 1,000, you know, folks limited per precinct, with videotape counting, with three counters who are bonded, that would make for a secure election. Josh, your line is live too. Feel free. Anyway, that's what I'm talking about. So given that the machines we know are corrupt, given that we know they're hacked, given that there's multiple video recordings of them being hacked. Oh, we've got a website for rumored. Let me copy it. I'll look it up later. I want to get this done. But given the fact that, see, the thing is that the best defense against defamation is the truth. So all Fox News, this was the perfect opportunity for Fox News to say, hey, you know what? You're right. Yeah, you're going to sue us for defamation? Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. You stole the election. Why don't they do that? That was the time to do it. Just like during, remember Marjorie Taylor Greene's trial? And her lawyers had her say, I don't remember. I don't remember saying the election was stolen. We know damn well she knows the election was stolen. We know damn well she said it multiple times. What her lawyer should have done has said, yes, she said the election is stolen, and here's why, and presented all the evidence why the election was stolen. See, these people, they keep missing these opportunities. And I don't know if Fox was paid off. You know, I mean, why would you give up $787 million when the truth is already known? I mean, they had the whole Arizona audit proving that the election was stolen. There are multiple hearings around the country with the Jenna Ellis and Rudy Giuliani did, proving that the election was stolen. There are multiple videos of ballots coming out from under desks, 2,000 mules, Dinesh D'Souza's film, multiple ballot boxes being stuffed illegally. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows that the count was shut down when Trump was winning, and by the next morning, Brandon was winning in those same precincts. But nobody knew what happened because everything was blocked out. Everybody knows the election was stolen, especially the Democrats, because they did it.
Rupert Murdoch had something to do with giving up?
Oh, I know Rupert Murdoch has something to do with giving up. But here's the thing. I can't find a single article on my perspective. I couldn't find a single article that said Fox News screwed up, that they could have proved the election, you know, was stolen. I'm waiting for Trump's comment. I can't find a Trump comment yet. Maybe it's going to come out today. Go ahead, Josh.
You know that people were arrested and, like, they're going to prison for fraud when it came to elections in several states, yeah.
Well, that's good. They're supposed to go for prison for fraud, but not enough.
Yes. I know, but I'm just saying that that's kind of a thing when it comes to the 2020 election, is people are being arrested and imprisoned.
Well,
for fraud in that election.
Where's the Republican election hearings on the 2020 election? How come the geldings haven't held the hearing by now?
Why do you think Republicans are going to do anything about malfeasance?
Oh, I don't think they're going to.
In the election ever.
That's why I call him Kevin McDeepstate, you know, the speaker. I don't have any faith in McCarthy. I don't have any faith in Republicans. That's why I call him the gelding old party. But I'm saying that's if they were a real party, if they're a real opposition, they would have held hearings day one of the session. They would have had a new January 6th committee, a real one, that actually looked into what really happened about the coup that took place under the Capitol, about the arm twisting that went on, about whatever bribery and extortion was done so that the Brandon electors would be appointed, of the real story of Mike Pence, how he refused to honor the Trump electors and only took the Brandon electors, causing Joe Biden to illegally be able to occupy the White House. Those are the things that they should have, you know, talked about day one. Where's Jim Jordan, my own congressman, Matt Gaetz? Where's he on this? I haven't heard him.
Yeah, you're kind of saying the same thing I'm saying, is party affiliates are not actually for mm-hmm. the American people.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to the journalists, or so-called journalists. What does this mean now that Fox News, rather than say the election was stolen and that what they reported was true, have instead decided to say that the election wasn't stolen, even though some of their reporters believe it and have reported it, and that they're going to pay $787 million, you know, on a defamation suit for something that they were right in all along? I don't understand that. So why would anybody be a journalist? Why would anybody report anything against the government if your company's going to bail on you and pay the people you're reporting on for stealing the election or anything else? What if Pfizer starts suing people for defamation, for reporting that their so-called vaccines, which are not vaccines, are not only not safe and not effective, they're dangerous, crippling, and deadly, which we know to be true? Is Pfizer going to start suing people now for what they reported? Come after me. You're not going to get much. And I'll get more publicity. In fact, I hope they do come after me. I'll get more publicity from the lawsuit. I'll get more listeners and do better if they do sue me, quite honestly, because it'll break the censorship that's blocking a lot of our shows from people. So go ahead. Come after me. I don't care. FBI, too. You want to Marco wrote BRB. I'm not sure what that means. It's got to be code for something. But this is a horrible precedent. You guys ever see Mr. Smith Goes to Washington? Josh, have you ever seen that?
No, I guess was just not. Thinking about that, my dinner with Andre.
And that's relevant how?
I'm sorry, no. I was just thinking about that right now.
Okay, let me give you another film. Have you ever seen All the President's Men? The story of Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, how they discovered what was happening with the Watergate scandal. Have you seen any good film about journalists? How about Aaron Brockovich?
Yeah, I've seen Aaron Brockovich.
Okay. Now, she wasn't a journalist. She was paralegal. But she uncovered horrible situations. I think it was Love Canal and some of the hazardous waste sites. I have to go back and take a look. She's still around, by the way. I'm going to try and get her on the show again. I wrote her before when she was in East Palestine. But there's another one, East Palestine. You know, there's another thing. What if we say that, Norfolk Southern intentionally screwed up their maintenance or cut corners on maintenance and helped cause that accident? Is that defamation? Well, let me look up defamation. It seems to me that this lawsuit should have been thrown out. The idea, and this is what's so galling to me, that the company that stole the election somehow was able to sue the media who was going to report on it, and the media are the ones who caved. That makes sense to me.
From my understanding that you need to come, when it comes to a claim, it has to come from good faith. And if you're not coming from good faith, then everything should be thrown out at all times. Yeah, you're actually kind of on point there. Yeah, this is not coming from good faith. This is a vindictive point that they're trying to play.
Where's the First Amendment, too? Where's the judge defending the First Amendment? Saying that Fox has the right to not only say what they want and report what they want, they also have the right to be wrong. And if they're wrong, Dominion can, go to other news agencies, or they can actually write their own stories. They can say, hey, you're wrong, and here's why. But they didn't do that. They sued them for $1.5 billion or $1.6 billion. That's a lot of money. Apparently, Dominion has sued a bunch of people. All right, so what do you think's really going on here? Let me ask you that. Then I got a Breitbart article on this. What do you think's really going on? Come on, conspiracy theorists.
What's really going on there?
Yeah, come on, conspiracy theorists. I need to put your tinfoil hats on and tell me what's really going on.
I know.
On
I'm
here.
I'm trying to do arm circles when I say this. All right. So what I really think is going on with that is mm-hmm. Somebody somewhere. There's got to be some kind of connection between the two.
Which to the two of what?
Dominion and Fox News. There's got to be somebody who is the intermediary. Like, there's got to be some higher up.
I had not
thought
of that.
There's got to be some higher up.
That's an interesting, that's a good point. Let me look that up. So Dominion, Fox News connection. I don't think that wasn't the problem I was thinking of, but that's certainly a valid point. Dominion, Fox News.
No, I think that's the only justification how they would possibly settle instead of let the suit go through and let Dominion lose.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question. Who controls Fox News? Government agency.
Yeah.
Which government agency controls Fox News? What's that?
CIA, FBI. I don't know.
No, the FCC. No, the Federal Communications Commission.
Oh.
The Federal Communications Commission.
All those people that tell me that I can't say curse words.
Okay. Well, the Federal Communications Commission. Yeah, exactly. So don't swear. Well, actually, we're not regulated by the FCC. This show is not licensed by the FCC because we're online. We're
internet. Telling me I can say all the bad words I want?
No, because I'll just hang up on you and not take your call again. So, no, you can't.
Ow.
That's my rule.
All my feelings.
Well, I don't care. This is the last. That's the least of my concern. But the point is that the FCC is controlled by the coup. Right? So if the FCC licenses Fox News and the FCC is controlled by an illegal government, do you think the illegal government's going to let Fox News say that the election was stolen?
Greg,
no.
You're starting to ask a lot of questions. You're starting to ask a lot of questions right now.
Well, that's what I do.
No, that's actually a fair assessment. No, that's a fair question.
Okay, so you want to? I can mute you for a bit. You can think about it. You want to think about it for a minute?
That's what you're willing to. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let me just hold you up for a bit. Give you a chance to ponder that. I want to get to Pianchi. Pianchi, the FCC is controlled by the Brandon insurrection. The Brandon insurrection stole the 2020 election. The 2020 election was stolen with Dominion voting machines. Dominion sells their voting machines to the government that stole the election.
Yeah, like a vicious circle, sound like.
How about that? So here's what I think is going on. I think Dominion, because they sell fraudulent voting machines that allow elections to be stolen, they are being protected by the government. That's how they can bring these suits. I think the judges are somehow being either influenced or chosen or co-opted or threatened that they better make sure that that Dominion wins the lawsuits, so that the illegal government of the Brandon insurrection, the Obama, Hillary Clinton, you know, whoever else is involved, plus the Republicans. So you got the deep state. So the deep state is protecting Dominion machines, so they have access to Dominion machines to steal more elections. If it becomes known that the election was stolen, which of course it was, if it becomes widely known in this lawsuit, see, what they cannot afford is to have Fox News prove that the election was stolen. But that's the only defense against a defamation suit. The truth is your defense. So the defense against the defamation by Dominion, who brought this lawsuit, is to say, yes, we were right. The election was stolen and we can prove it. And that way Fox News should get the $1.6 billion in a countersuit. That's the defense. But they didn't use the defense. Instead, they said, oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, the election wasn't stolen. Oh, I'm sorry for what our reporters said. They actually speculated, you know, that maybe that was the case. We'll pay you. Yeah, you're right. Why would Fox News do that if they weren't under the control of the same government that is regulating Fox News and protecting Dominion machines so they can continue to steal elections? That's what's going on. Pianchi?
Well, it seemed like you put the pieces together.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it fun? I love when I do that. Let me bring Josh back for a second, see if he's had a chance to think about that. Josh, does my scenario make sense?
Yeah, no, that's a fair assessment.
Okay, let me get you this article.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. But look how dangerous that is. Now, who else is talking about that on the news? Nobody. Only here at Action Radio is that scenario being put forward. Let me see what Breitbart, which is a conservative, patriotic news source, modeled on Andrew Breitbart, who I believe was killed by the government. They say Fox News Dominion reached $787 million settlement in defamation lawsuit. Here's what I don't understand. I'm going to talk to Jonathan about this Monday. Give him a chance to think about it. They picked the jury. They were all set for opening arguments. Then all of a sudden, they delayed the trial for 2.5 hours negotiating. My question is, why? If they'd already picked the jury, unless the jury was a total fraud, and they were definitely against Fox News, why would they go to all the trouble of getting the lawyers together, of picking a jury, of having their opening statements ready to go, ready to try the case, and all of a sudden they go into 2.5 hours of negotiations and Fox News pays almost $1 billion? That happened.
Have you embraced the possibility that that was pre-negotiated?
Before the trial? No,
see,
I haven't.
Something going on. Fox News must have made about $2 billion off of their reporting or more. But, I always have suspected something. There's a third page to all this that we haven't investigated as well as it should be.
I agree. But Josh makes an interesting point, too, that this might have been arranged even before the trial even started. That's even worse. And you call me a conspiracy theorist? Wow, that's a good one. That's definitely tinfoil.
Why did they just do it in an arbitration?
Why did they go to trial? Exactly. Why did they go to trial at all? Josh, do you know anything about this, or are you just speculating? I mean, it's a good point. It's worth investigating.
Yeah, no, I think that when it comes to these big conglomerates, people that are throwing this kind of cash around and people that have these kind of pay scales, I think there might have been a conversation way before, and this might have been negotiated before it ever was in the public eye.
Absolutely. Yes, The whole theory about the election being stolen is still not settled. They didn't say that we give up. They just went to arbitration. Well, they just went to a settlement. They said, well, we want to, if you all prepared for opening arguments, you are prepared and have chosen a jury. Well, why come the trial didn't go on?
That's what I want to
know. Something else is going on.
Exactly. This is going to take some serious investigation. Well, so let's see if the so-called journalists in D.C. can come up with something. But how did Dominion have enough money to bring a suit against Fox News? How much money did they have to go after these? You know, they got $787 million more now. But how much money does Dominion have to bring these lawsuits? And where do they get their money?
I like to repeat myself because the sound of my own voice is so interesting to me. No, these are people that are billion-dollar people. Like they mess with this money all the time. This is not news.
But where do they get their
people
money?
That own
is it all the government contracts to Dominion? They have that much money, or are they being protected by government? Which is my suspicion.
How much money was Jeffrey Epstein worth?
Okay, different issue.
I'm just saying that's important to understand that there are people that you have no idea how much money they're worth. You don't know how they got their money. You don't know where they threw their money. Yeah, so I acknowledge the possibility that there are a bunch of people throwing money into nonsense. And
I got to investigate Dominion more. I want to find out where they get their money. All right, so let me hold both of you up just for a bit here. Let me get this article by Breitbart. Fox News Dominion reached $787 million. All right, I got some background. Let me just mute a little bit here just so I can get through the background noise. Let's see what we got here now. Fox News Dominion reached $787 million settlement in defamation lawsuit. This was written yesterday. Jordan Dixon Hamilton, no idea who that is. Fox News has agreed to pay Dominion Voting Systems a $787 million settlement, avoiding a trial in the $1.6 billion defamation case. I guess the $787 million is like about half or a little over half. Who knows math? Anyway, defamation case. The electronic voting company brought against the cable news company. I'm getting background noise on Pianki's line too. Let me just mute you both until I get through this. Dominion brought a $1.6 billion lawsuit against Fox News and parent company Fox Corporation in March 2021. So they did this 2 years ago. That's interesting. For defamation, accusing the news outlet of harming its reputation by airing former President or I would say current president, Donald Trump and his attorney's claims that Dominion voting machines were used to rig the 2020 election. Let me say it for the record. Dominion's voting machines were used to rig the 2020 election. Back to the article. Fox News has argued that Trump and his attorney's claims were newsworthy and protected by the First Amendment's right of freedom of the press. Actually, they were. Fox News can report that Trump said the election was stolen. You can't sue them for that. That's freedom of the press. However, it says Dominion accused Fox News and its executives of airing such claims to save their falling ratings after the 2020 election. That's okay, too. They can do that. You know, if we question the motivations of why CNN, you know, carried the Russia story for 2 years, that'd be interesting. I mean, I guess Trump could sue them for defamation, too. Then it says the party settled on the first day of the trial, which was scheduled to start Tuesday after a 24-hour delay. After Delaware, oh, of course, Delaware, you know, Biden state, Delaware Superior Court Judge Eric Davis swore in the 12 jurors and alternates on Tuesday morning, court proceedings were delayed for nearly 2.5 hours as attorneys for both sides engaged in last-minute negotiations. Why would you're supposed to negotiate before the trial. You're supposed to negotiate right as the trial is about to begin after you pick the jury. Unless the jury was a total fraud, which might be the case in Delaware. It'd be like trying to get a jury for Trump in Manhattan. Article says the trial was set to start at 1:30 p.m., but Davis took the bench shortly before 4 p.m. and announced the parties had settled. Oh, in 2.5 hours? That's pretty quick. That in itself deserves an investigation. Then it says the case has been resolved, and it's been resolved because of you, Davis told the jurors. Wait a minute, how'd the jurors resolve this? Then it says the judge said your presence here was extremely important, and without you, the parties would not have been able to resolve their situation. Great, we need profiles on the jurors. I'll tell you right now, we need profiles on the jurors. How is it that the judge said that the jury resolved this case? Unless the jurors were like Dominion jurors, hired or paid for or paid off to already have a predetermined verdict. Maybe Fox knew it was the verdict was already predetermined, and they'd rather pay $787 million rather than $1.6 billion. Then it says Tuesday settlement avoids what was expected to be a 6-week trial. Ah, too bad. Which means Fox News executives and hosts like Rupert Murdoch, Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson, and other potential witnesses will not have to testify before a jury about the network's coverage of the 2020 election. More is the pity. I would love to see Tucker on the stand. He'd probably say, yeah, the election was stolen. What are you going to do about it? Then it says the trial would have featured more than 12,000 exhibits. As Dominion's and Fox's attorneys reportedly indicated, there would be more than 7,000 and over 5,000 exhibits, respectively. Last week, Davis sanctioned Fox News. That's the judge. Sanctioned Fox News, said the outlet had a credibility problem, and criticized its attorneys for not being, quote, straightforward with the court after it was revealed that Fox News withheld evidence from Dominion and may have made misrepresentations to the court about Murdoch's role at Fox News. I'm going to open up the lines again here. This is too good to miss. And talk about this as we go. So the judge.
I hear the juror was probably, I think 9 out of the 12 jurors was black.
Well, that's interesting. In Delaware? Is Delaware a predominantly black state? Like South Carolina?
I heard something like that. I'm not too sure. But
so
it would require further investigation.
Can we assume these are black Democrats? Was that investigated?
If it comes out of Delaware, I would, in that area, yes, I would say they are Democrats.
So they hate
Trump.
So we've got a jury of 9 of 12 black jurors, Democrats, who hate Trump. So much for fair trial.
And
here's
then, too, maybe the evidence they had was too sophisticated for the jurors. So
why would you assume that the jurors couldn't understand it? You teach the jurors the evidence. We deal with really complex subjects here all the time. I break it down and explain it. Nothing's that hard to explain, really.
It would be like trying to teach the jurors evidence in the George Floyd trial.
Oh, that he died of a heart attack because he was on fentanyl? What's the problem? He died of a heart attack because he was on fentanyl. That's easy to explain.
Yeah, don't ingest large amounts of drugs. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, but that ain't the visualization they see. They see a white police officer kneeling on a black man's neck who was already dead. So that's the way it is.
Yeah, well, perception versus reality. So if the jury was, so now they both had six challenges. You got six challenges to the jurors. You can strike six jurors. So my question is, were there so many jurors who hated Trump in the jury pool that Fox News was never going to get a fair trial? In which case they should have declared, we're never going to get a fair trial. They should have moved for a mistrial or something, you know, some relief from this. Or what they should have done is done the trial and immediately appealed it. Because obviously there's some corruption going on here.
Yeah, no, that's reasonable.
So why would the judge sanction Fox News, said the outlet had a credibility problem? So that judge should be thrown off the case right there, saying that one of the parties to the case has a credibility problem?
Well, the way the story went out is that Dominion won. They didn't. The story's not going out where people would think of it as being an agreed upon settlement.
Well, Dominion did win. I mean, they shouldn't have gotten any money. They should be paying. You know, they should lose.
Well, they wanted $1.6 billion. They settled for less than half.
Oh, isn't that big of them? They only settled for $787 million.
If their case was that strong, why come they settled?
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Why would you do that if you had an actual case?
Well, they wouldn't. Well, if they had an actual case, though, they should have gone for the $1.6 billion, if that's what they believed.
Yeah, no, if I knew that I was correct, I would go for the whole case.
Sure.
Caboodle.
I've watched all those TV law shows over the years. So let me get to this article. Judge sanctions Fox News for withholding evidence in Dominion $1.6 billion defamation case. Well, the news that they withheld is the fact that the election was stolen. So whatever they know on that, that's what they're withholding. But that's not a crime. That's just stupid. Then it says Delaware Superior Court Judge Eric Davis sanctioned Fox News on Wednesday for withholding evidence in Dominion's $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit against a news outlet. This is dated the 13th of April. So this was, today's the 19th, so this is 6 days ago. This is Judge Davis. Try to keep the background noise to a minimum, guys, if you can. Although I don't want to try. I don't have to mute you every time. All right, who's making the noise? All right, let me just. All right, we're good now. It says Judge Davis' sanction came after lawyers for Dominion highlighted numerous instances of Fox News attorneys' failure to turn over evidence promptly, according to a person present in the courtroom. What evidence? They're the journalists. They can actually withhold sources legally under the First Amendment. You know, judge says, you have to tell us your sources. We're like, no, it's a secret source. We're not going to tell you. That's their right. Huh. Then it says some of the newly turned over evidence includes recordings made by former Fox employee Abby Grossberg that feature former President Donald Trump's attorney Rudy Giuliani claiming he did not have evidence to back up his claims that Dominion rigged the 2020 presidential election in Joe Biden's favor. Well, that's kind of stupid of Trump. These recordings were done before pre-typed Fox appearances and were circulated and discussed within Fox, according to Grossberg. Well, I don't have to do that. Dominion's defamation lawsuit accuses Fox News of harming its reputation by airing Trump and his attorney's claims that the Denver-based company's voting machines were used to rig the election. Well, obviously they were used to rig the election. That was demonstrated. This is Fox denied that it withheld these recordings from Dominion. Well, I don't even know if Dominion has a right to them. If that's proprietary news stuff, it's none of their damn business. Then it says, as counsel explained to the court, Fox produced the supplemental information from Ms. Grossberg when we first learned it. That's a Fox News spokesperson said in a statement Wednesday. Grossberg has filed a separate lawsuit against Fox News, claiming her deposition was coerced. Well, that's interesting. Grossberg's Tuesday court filings brought the recordings to light, which also include conversations with former Trump lawyer Sidney Powell. Ooh, now it's getting more interesting. Huh. This is, we are pleased that the court recognized the very serious apparent discovery related and other gross misconduct perpetrated by Fox News and its team of high-powered attorneys in relation to Dominion v. Fox. See, how come nobody's going after Dominion? Well, it's a long article. I'll get to this one later. Let me get back to my other one. I don't know wherever that is. Where's my other article? Let's take this one out. Get back to the other one. Ah, here we go. We got about 17 minutes left. I'm going to investigate that other one. But this, it seems like Fox News is the one that has to turn over everything. I haven't seen Dominion turn over anything. How come Dominion doesn't have to turn over their schematics for their voting machines? How come they don't have to turn over their internet modems? How come they don't have to explain, you know, all the voting changes after Trump won at 10 o'clock at night And then all the Democrats covered up the boards, the buildings, kicked out all the Republican counters. And by the next morning, surprise, surprise, Biden had won by a slight amount in all these different areas. How come they don't have to count for that? See, Dominion is being protected. They don't have to count for anything. Fox News is being gone after by a judge.
I said before was actually pretty relative here. I think that this was a negotiated thing before it ever went to court. I think that both of these guys are worth billions of dollars, and I think that one of them was handing off a tiny portion in comparison. And I think
I think there's more to this though, because if Fox News used the proper defense, which is, in fact, the election was stolen, or just presented whatever they had to say about it, or used the things they actually broadcast. They shouldn't have to disclose things they haven't broadcast. That's internal. Dominion has no right to that. Neither does anybody else. But what they broadcast counts. So it says that Fox News has admitted to telling lies about Dominion that caused enormous damage to their company. See, what the real thing is, they can't get it out there. No one can question the 2020 election. What this really is about, I think, also, is suppressing any dissent from the party propaganda that the election of 2020 was the safest and best election in history, which is a bunch of nonsense. BS.
Biden not getting 86 million votes, you're telling me that that's not legitimate?
Yes, I think so. But
no, that's fair.
Yeah, I can go to Pianki and then come back.
They say Trump got over 100 million. Greg, I see no more.
Oh, you got to go? Okay. Too bad. This is getting interesting. We're going to talk more about this. All right, so Pianki to leave. So I got you, Josh. But let's talk about this for a minute, because I really believe that what's really going on here is they can't let anybody think for a second that the election was stolen. This is the extension of the January 6th committee. This is the extension of the propaganda. This is the extension of the illegal coup, accusing everybody else of saying that there was an illegal coup when in fact there was an illegal coup, which I just said. But they can't get that out there. So Fox can't be allowed to state the obvious that the election was stolen. That's what this is about. Dominion is being used.
That's a fair take on it, and if that's actually what's going on, then man, I feel really bad for the people that go against that.
No, so listen,
because they're asking for something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well, here's the thing
too. Be careful what you ask for.
So why would Fox be Fox has admitted to telling lies about Dominion? Well, I mean, news media lies all the time. CNN, MSNBC have lied about Trump since Trump declared he was running for president. Why aren't they being sued for defamation? Because they represent the government. That's why, you know. But think about it. If it's a lie to report that the election might have been stolen, in other words, you're saying that media has to go through a government censor to prove what they're saying is true before they report it. Otherwise, they might be sued. Media's not going to report anything. This is as anti-First Amendment as it gets. You can't say that Fox News is lying. Of course, the defense would be to prove that they're lying. How do you prove they're lying? Well, you'd have to prove that the election wasn't stolen. Well, how do you do that? Well, let's take a look at the voting machines. We'll find that the election was stolen. So again, they can't risk that either.
I think the consequences are going to far outweigh the nonsensical payout. Like, this is not going to be – there's nothing sweet about what Dominion just did. Can
Here's
I say that?
Too. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's fine. Here's another thing, too. What happens to Dominion's contracts if Fox wins the lawsuit? Do you think they're ever going to be able to sell or repair or maintain or keep in anywhere a Dominion voting machine? If they lose this lawsuit, they're out of business. Because no one's going to buy the machine.
I think that's why they did it.
But they didn't have to do it. Nobody was dumping their machines. No government agents. Well, some were, but not enough. Most of the election, county, city, state election folks were keeping Dominion machines. Do you see a mass dumping of Dominion machines? I don't.
I think the point of the suit was to make people uncomfortable doing what Fox did. And either way, it's all going to go to hell. You know what? You already know we're already going down, bud. Where Chicago is going to go the way of Detroit. L.A. is going to go the way of New York. You know, this is we're watching a slow roll, a slow burn.
Uh-huh.
And man,
why do you think I created Action Radio? Listen, let me let you go for the day. I got about 10 minutes left. I want to finish the article. Thank you for participating today. Let me just get through this last little bit. I want to comment on some of these things myself here, and then we'll be done for the day. So another 3 hours by myself. Oh boy. Well, not by myself. I had my my friends Pianki and Josh on the line, but where are my reporters? Got to get you folks back on. All right. So then it says the last minute settlement. I've read this before. Includes a $787.5 million. How did we arrive at that figure? Million payment from Fox. Dominion attorney Justin Nelson announced. He says Fox has admitted to telling lies about Dominion that caused enormous damage to my company, our employees, and the customers that we serve. Well, who are the customers? Well, people that need votes counted. So that would be cities, counties, and states where or in incorporated areas wherever they have voting machines. So that's who they serve. So the customers should be us. Because ultimately, we're the taxpayers. We're the ones who should be, paying for an honest election. But I don't think we're getting one. I know we're not. Then it says Dominion CEO John Poulos, P-O-U-L-O-S, said at a press conference Tuesday afternoon, nothing can ever make up for that. Well, they're so worried about their reputation. Well, why are they worried about their reputation? Because they want to sell voting machines. Why do they want to sell voting machines? So the elections can be stolen. It's a vicious cycle that just keeps continuing. Well, who wants elections stolen? Well, the coup. The coup that stole the election that's in power now. So the coup has to protect Dominion. I don't know how they do it. Probably they picked the right judge and the right jury. And the FCC goes after Fox. Now, the FCC hasn't charged Fox with anything. They can't charge Fox with lying because that's not what you do to journalists. Yeah, you can force them to make a correction. But who's to say it was a lie? They could have just got the story wrong. That's usually what's said about these kind of things. Unless you knew they were lying. But even if you do, lying is not a crime. In that case, you sue them for defamation. But the thing is, I would sue in that way. Why can't we sue Dominion for defamation? You know, they've done irreparable harm to our elections by saying that they're safe and effective. Oh, sorry, that's COVID. Dominion saying that the elections are fair and safe and honest, that's done irreparable harm to our elections because we know they're not. I've got infinite experts I could bring forward to prove that these elections are not. So Dominion is actually defaming our whole election process. Then it says, however, Dominion attorney Stephen Shackelford warned that the settlement with Fox is not the end of the company's legal efforts to save its reputation. Well, why would they have a bad reputation if they were an honorable company? They wouldn't. They would have a good reputation. So why do they need legal efforts to save their reputation? Well, because they're scum. That's why. Then it says, we're not done yet. We have some other people who have some accountability coming toward them. Oh, are you going to come after me? Oh, please come after me. Please, please, please. I love a fight. Come on. Let's go. FBI, KGB, too. If you want to talk to me, call the show like everybody else does. 215-383-3832. Love to talk to you. I'd even come down and chat maybe. Maybe not. We'll see. Maybe not voluntarily. Then it says a Fox spokesperson, I was waiting to hear from them, said the company is pleased to settle the case. Because they're a bunch of weenie cowards, and acknowledged the court's findings that certain claims about Dominion were false. Yeah, they're way too compliant. There's something really wrong here. So this is what Fox has said. We are pleased to have reached a settlement of our dispute with Dominion Voting Systems. Well, they didn't have a dispute with voting systems. Dominion had a dispute with them. So they've already reversed themselves. Then it says, we acknowledge the court's rulings finding certain claims about Dominion to be false. Oh, really? Why would they admit that? Why not just make a correction? See, that was the correct answer. If Fox knew that they reported something wrong, they do what every other journalist operation does. They make a correction. But you don't sue them over it. Then it says, this settlement reflects Fox's continued commitment to the highest journalistic standards. No, it doesn't. they've completely abandoned journalistic standards, which are upholding the First Amendment and the freedom of information. So they've lost that battle right there. Then it says, we are hopeful that our decision to resolve this dispute with Dominican amicably, what, they're trying to sue your ass. Why? There's nothing amicable about this. Then it says, instead of acrimony of a divisive trial, allows the country to move forward from these issues. Well, actually, it stops us from moving forward because the trial would have allowed us to actually, you know, discuss these issues. So what they've actually done is remove the possibility of moving forward because they didn't go forward with the trial. This is terrible. Then it says Fox Corporation had roughly $4.1 billion of cash and cash equivalents on hand at the end of 2022. So they had the money to pay for this. Last little bit. First Amendment attorney Mark Garbus told the Times that everybody wins with Tuesday's settlement. Well, you can't be a First Amendment attorney if you think that everybody wins. You're an idiot. Then it says, with the settlement, everybody wins. Fox goes its way. Dominion gets cash. Well, Dominion is a fraudulent voting company. Why would you want them to have cash? So much for this Martin Garbus. Then it says Fox is facing a similar defamation lawsuit against electronic voting firm Smartmatic. Well, I guess they're going to pay out another $787 million to Smartmatic, which sued the cable news company in February 2021 over fraud claims. Yeah, I've had enough. I'm so disgusted. We've covered a lot of stuff today, done a lot, taken breaks, done all the things. Oh, I'm sorry, I raised my whole window. I didn't mean to do that. Anyway, so we're going to close a couple minutes early. And I'll get to, I've got a bunch of stuff here. I'll sort through for news for other days. But these are long days when I have to chat like this. What if I want to play something else? I'll play let me get one of my anti-federalist papers just to give you an idea what to, see, I'm an anti-federalist. I mean, in other words, when the Constitution was being ratified, there were two groups. There were the Federalists who supported it and the anti-federalists who wanted it opposed. And so I'm going to play one of my earlier pieces from the anti-federalists. I'll let you know what, let me see if I can find one here. Scroll. The Sedition Act, I played that one, Church of the State. Did I get rid of them all? Oh, man, I think I took them off my site. Well, that's no fun. What can I play you? I don't want to play the Sedition Act again. Huh. I have to go find more of these. Yeah, I've taken out the ones that were good. I'll have to put them back. That's okay. In that case, I will... that's too long. I got all these different things here. Nothing's really... I don't really have a five-minute thing I can play you. Now, let's do the Sedition Act. So this is kind of interesting. You'll find this is... four minutes. I'll play this one real quick. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers.
Yeah, actually, they're not sponsoring us anymore, but since I made these things, I want to keep them around because some of them have some really good information. So I'm going to upload all the anti-federalist ones that I made and probably continue on, make more anti-federalist ones because I find it's my 92nd warning. I find them far more interesting than the Federalist Papers, quite honestly. Federalist Papers are like a propaganda piece that could have come out of any government that wants control over everything. All right, so this is where we stand. So it's April 19th. This is our Patriots Day. A lot of things happen on this day, very controversial day, and so take a look at it in history. But the most important thing to notice is what's not being covered today. All the things we cover on the show are not being covered today. In fact, there's not a single story we did, including Fox News, that is being covered the way we're doing it. And so that's the whole point of Action Radio. As for legislation, the big ones, of course, are the usual ones, vaccine product liability, ending big tech censorship. We have a new bill that would prohibit drug advertising and prescription drugs. We have a constitutional amendment that would take away the power of Congress to borrow money. We have a bill that would disarm all the illegally armed federal agencies, which is all of them. the only thing that can be armed in the federal government is the military. And we have various other bills at writeyourlaws.com. So go to writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, go click on, there we go, Marcos got to leave. So you take care too. There we go. Anyway, so take a look. So go to writeyourlaws.com, click on legislation, and then click all proposed laws. And once you click all proposed laws, you get the ones that we are doing, the ones that we're sending out. But the rest of the time, just start at the homepage and work your way through. It'll make infinite sense to you. Show site, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. My Substack, gregpenglis.substack.com. And our contributions, givesendgo.com/actionradio. And I'll be back tomorrow, 7 a.m. Central Time, with a whole other show. And we'll talk to you then. We'll be right back.